can see, we are not yet correcting, and I am not sure whether the entity that we're going to deal with this morning is in CITB. Can we also check whether it is in the number that we have? It doesn't show that it's in. I don't even see the CO. Department, can it assist us in checking the entity?
Please. No check, sir. Good morning, Chairperson. It's Ibrahim Mula from CIDB and Mulai from Otoho. We just, our CEO and Chairperson are just trying to connect. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We need to start and we need them in the meeting. I'd like to check whether the honorable members have also tried to join.
I'm in, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Mr. Trabo, Honorable Franz Kalvik, Honorable Silo, Honorable Siwisa.
Sorry, Chairperson, from CIDB side,
recording in progress.
So, from CIDB side, you are fine?
Yes, we have Mr. Ladla, our CEO, myself, Ibrahim Mulla, and Ibrahim from Otoho. The chairperson is trying to join, but maybe our CEO can just say a few things. Thank you.
CEO, where is the chairperson?
Good morning, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson at the German Parliamentarian. The Chairperson is also attempting to log in, Chair. I've asked him to re-enter. Oh, now the Chairperson is now in, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Lazi, in terms of the members, are we correcting? Because we're not yet correcting. We're fine.
Good morning, Chair. We do have a quorum, Chairperson.
So we have 6 members. Razi, I saw Honorable Cyril Solo, I saw Jobo, I saw Fanskalvi, I saw Siwisa.
And Honorable Chabalala is here.
Okay. We then are correcting. Can you fly to the agenda, please? Thank you. Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee of Public Works and Infrastructure, the chairperson of the CIDB, the CEO or other board members that are here in the meeting, the CEO of the CIDB together with the management of CIDB, Deputy Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure, the acting DG of Public Works and Infrastructure, all those that are watching our meeting today, good morning. We are continuing dealing with the department and its entities in interacting with the audit report that has various entities. Today, I think it's our third day. We started on Tuesday, first with Auditor General, secondly with the department and PMTE. Yesterday, we dealt with IDT and Agrima SA. Today, we're dealing with CIDB and CBE later today. So, one, we are preparing for the BRRR. So that is why we are having these meetings and packed as they are. So honorable members should understand that we will be doing this, but today is the last day for us dealing with these reports. Do we have any apologies, Lwazi?
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. Chairperson, we have an apology from Minister Zikalala, and then I have an apology for Honorable Van Staden. Honorable Siwisa will leave early, Chair, due to other commitments, Chairperson. I just wanted you to know that, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Lazi. And I understand that the minister said that he will be able to join at 12. I got that message from the office of the minister. You'll only be able to join at 12. So I think we must also note that. Yes, Honorable Jabo.
Good morning, Chairperson, and the minister and the deputy minister and the CIDB delegation. My apologies, Chair. I have one apology. Honorable Matebula will join us at 12, and Honorable Marcelo is going to join us just now. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Honorable Njobo. I hope that we also note those apologies and those requests of leaving the meeting early and those that will join the meeting later on. Lwazi, the CEO is requesting for hosting rights. I think there is a message in the chat group. I now invite the Honorable Deputy Minister, Ms. Perusat, to introduce the entity to us.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, and good morning to the Honorable Members and to the delegation from the CIDB and all officials. Honorable Chair, the CIDB is here like all the other entities that we have had throughout the days, so that they also do their presentation, so that the Honorable Committee of Parliament can do their oversight, and like all the other entities, give us their comments and thoughts and questions, which will then allow us that this entity also goes through a process of fixing and amending what would have been recommended by the Auditor General. I will now give over to the Honorable Chair and through you, Chair, that the CIGP then presents to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, DM, for that words introducing the entity. We will ask the chairperson of the entity to be the one who speaks first before the CEO and their management. Chairperson?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm not sure if I'm audible.
You are audible enough, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair of the Portfolio Committee. Greetings to you, Chairperson, and the committee members, and also to our Deputy Minister. Chair, I think on this session, I'm quite proud of the team that I'm with and the work that is done, as you will get to realize throughout the presentation. Chairperson, I'm with the CEO of the entity, Mr. Bongani Dlaza, and our CFO, Sifiso Ntsibande, and we are accompanied by the directors in the CEO's office and also the Director for Strategic Planning and Monitoring and Evaluation. That is the team that will be part of this presentation, Chair. Chair, first of all, as I said, I'm quite proud of what we have done and what we have achieved over the year. We have achieved the 100% performance in terms of our APP, as you might be well aware. And as an entity, I think we continue to maintain the stability despite of the challenges that prevail within the industry. We've been concerned over the past months since we started our term about the dip in numbers of the contractors that are registering, but we see those numbers picking up and normalizing and stabilizing. We're still maintaining a register of 120,000 contractors throughout the country, which is still ongoing and improving. Also, Chairperson, you will note that in our presentation that our transformation numbers have improved, possibly not to the extent that you'd want them to be, but however, there is some consistency and improvement. I think over the last few months, what has been important, Chairperson, is our outreach programs and the stakeholder engagement, which has brought a lot of insight for CIDB. And this assists us a lot, Chair, in terms of giving us direction and improvement within the industry. And I'm proud and happy to announce that it seems the work that has been done is quite aligned with our stakeholders. As you would know, we had identified 7 priority areas that we focus on. And I think our stakeholders have endorsed this approach. And really, the areas that we are focused on are indeed the areas that our stakeholders are seeking our intervention. So I think for us now, it's a matter of execution and ensuring that we accomplish what we had set out, and I think that would make a huge difference within the industry. I must also say and emphasize that we've improved our stance in terms of skills development, which the CEO will take you, highlighting, of course, the major event of the 250 women contractors that we had trained in the last few months. Of course, these are also the benefits that we are yielding from our build program, which we are now slowly and surely putting into place, and we are starting to see the benefits, Chairperson. I think from my end, those are just the highlights, and of course, the major one, Chair, and I know that we've received quite a bit of support from this committee. You would remember last year, we were unhappy with our qualified audit, and this year things have improved through consistent engagement with the AGSA. I think it helps that we did not let go easily and accept their findings in the previous year. And through the consistent engagement, we are able to improve our position. And in this last financial year, we received an unqualified audit. And of course, we continue to strive, Chairperson, meaning that in the next financial year, our target is to receive a clean audit for that financial year. So things are looking good, Chair. As I said, we've maintained our stability, and I think I'll hand over to the CEO just to provide a few more details on some of the aspects that I've covered. Through you, Chair, if the CEO may enter and commence with his presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson of the Committee, Deputy Minister Swart, all members of Parliament, the DG, colleagues from Public Works, and also colleagues from CIDB. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Can Mr. Ibrahim Mula be allowed to share the presentation, please?
I'm just attempting to do that. Okay, for some reason, I'm sorry, but for some reason it's not going to the presentation mode. Let me just try again. Yeah, can you confirm, is it fine now?
Yes, it is fine now. We can go to the next slide. Thank you very much. Honorable Chairperson, Deputy Minister, thank you again for the opportunity to be able to present our annual report for 2022-2023. Next slide. Chair, we will cover briefly the issues relating to our legislative mandate and the strategic goals that you set based on the administration's goals and also that of the department, and then highlight our performance against the audit, the annual performance plan that was approved by this committee, and then also look at the audit outcomes and issues relating to governance there. And then also, lastly, we will look at our financial impact. On the slide. Chairperson and the committee, Honorable Chairperson and the committee, the CIDB is still committed to ensuring that we do development and also transformation of the industry through partnerships. And our commitments are aligned to that of having an inclusive, ethical construction industry that develops to a prosperous South Africa and also the world. And our development interventions, we will both use the legislative aspects that we have been empowered with through the CIDP Act, and also partnerships and direct development interventions that also have been, we have been empowered through the build program. Our strategic focus, Chairperson, has been that of being a reputable regulator, providing innovation in the thriving construction industry, and ensuring inclusive growth in the construction industry, working in alliance with all our stakeholders, and obviously that underpinned by solid governance. Next slide. Chairperson, our programs, we structured ourselves to having six programs as a CIDP, one covering administration, which I will briefly touch on, and the second one covering research and development, which informed the policy directions and policy positions that we take. The other one, Chairperson, being construction industry regulations, where we apply our regulations to ensure that the risk mitigation is taken into account when the state enters into contract with the public sector, with the construction industry. The fourth aspect is construction industry performance, because we are concerned about improving the performance of the construction industry, because efficiencies that are seen there have a possibility of also improving service delivery and employment. The next aspect is working on procurement and development, because also procurement is a powerful tool to ensuring that we are able to transform the industry. Then the last aspect is our provincial operations, which have been increased now to ensure that we use our provinces as delivery centers for all the development work and support in our client. Next slide. The Chairperson has highlighted our performance for the year under review. We performed at 100%. So we met all the targets that we had set for ourselves, the 15 targets that we had set for ourselves. I'm seeing a comment, Chair. I'm not sure if... Yeah, we've met all the targets that we have set for ourselves in the APP that covered the period of 22-23. And I will highlight
Mr. Sandler, you saw the comment, ne? I don't know whether it's wind or whatever, there is a background noise.
Is it still there, Chair?
Okay, continue. We could hear you even earlier on, but there was that background noise. Let's continue.
divisive because this one. Is it still for that?
Yes.
I'm not sure, Chairperson, if it's really my connection here.
I just want to check whether is there no one who has his or her mic open. I don't see anyone, Jay. I think just continue because we can hear you though there is that noise. But just continue.
Okay. I apologize, Chairperson. I will close all windows also in the office. Can you go to the next slide, EP? Yes. Chairperson, on program.
Lost the presenter, Chair.
We have lost him now. We lost you earlier on, Mr. Dada.
Yes, Chairperson, I'm not sure what's going on.
Chair, that sounds like a weak connection.
Yes. Like we can't even hear him now, but very funny, his mic is open, and maybe he's supposed to be talking.
On with the wind. We had some of these problems yesterday, so perhaps if there's somebody else to facilitate, Chair, until the Mr. Dladla can sort out his connection.
We seem to be suffering from network.
Yeah. I think it's network challenges. Anyone who can call him and tell him that we can't hear anything that he's saying.
I'm trying to call him.
Okay.
We're calling you.
Chairperson, I was going to request if our CFO can perhaps continue with the presentation, if that's okay with you, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Zibanda, can you continue with the presentation whilst we're trying to get the CEO back online?
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to the members of the portfolio committee, the chairperson of the CIPB board, and colleagues from the public sector family. I will continue with the presentation up until Mr. Dadla comes back. Where Mr. Dadla left off, he was talking about the divisional performance, Chair, program one, Chair. That we had about five targets in program one. Program one, Chair, will consist of the CEO's office, as well as the support at main, Chair. So the programs that the indicator that we had for that particular program were five. The first one was around the issues of staff attending fraud and prevention awareness session, Chair, which is one of the targets that we have as IDB. So ensuring that we are bringing integrity to our register. We 100% of that was achieved, Chair. Also, when it comes to from the IT perspective, Chair, relating to the system uptime, Chair will also understand that most of our service orientation now has been moved to online. We had an annual target of about 95. We achieved 98%. And of course, Chair, the one which relates to ensuring that we procure services from BEE compliant suppliers. The annual target was 92. We managed to get 100% of our budget to white people who are BEE compliant. As well as in terms of invoices are paid within 30 days, Chair, we achieve 100%, meaning all the invoices were paid within the period of 30 days. And the last one, Chair, was around issues of stakeholder engagement, where we planned to actually have an NSF, and then, of course, in making sure that whatever that has been raised by an NFF is implemented. We were targeting about 80% of those targets, and we managed to implement 81%. Of all the issues that are raised by our stakeholders insofar as the IDP improvement. Program 2, Chair, is our research and development unit. We planned to conduct 2 research studies, and those research studies were conducted, Chair. Program 3, Chair, report, mainly deals with us with our inspection services. Chair, in that regard, Chair, we had one. Issuing a number of reports in terms of the registration criteria, Chair. We did manage to actually revise our registration criteria, Chair. Currently, they are sitting with the desk of the Minister, and we do hope that they're going to be published as well as for public comment in the very near future, Chair. And of course, we also had identifying of a number of projects that are not identified on ROP. We were targeting about 3,000, Chair, where CITP is part of our compliance improvement. We go and try to make sure that we identify projects and then make sure that those projects are registered on our ROP for completeness of the value chain insofar as CITP control of our industry. We managed to actually get about 3,000 of those as per target, Chair. The other target that we had was on ensuring that we are able to register contractors from grade 1 to grade 9 within 21 working days, Chair, in line with the CITP regulations, and that's what I've hit. Program 4, Chair, Program 4, this is our contractor and development, Chair. We had 2 targets that we had. One was the number of monitoring and evaluation we conducted. Chair, we did about 4 in line with the target, Chair. And then, of course, the other one was a number of reports of public expenditure, where we look at the report as of a report and then look at the total public spend, including your municipalities as well as your local provincial government, and then try to actually see if the infrastructure spend is as per the plan. And we did one report in that regard here. Then Program 5, Chair, in terms of the Program 5, Chair, which deals mainly with your capacitation of land. We aimed at ensuring that we are producing guideline to facilitate the implementation of the build program, primarily around the issues of your skills development, as well as Chair your build implementation, as well as your inputting and costing of the build percentage, Chair. We aim for 2 targets, and in those 2 targets are achieved, Chair. And we also aimed at ensuring that we at least capacitate about 36 client department around the issues of the build, as well as other CITP registrations. We managed to also pretty much all double the number from 36 to about 71. And then Chair, Program 6, which deals mainly with our also capacitation within the provinces, Chair. We were hoping, and which is directly engaging with the contractors there. One, we were hoping to provide contract development to our contractors, primarily at the earlier stage of the CITP registration, which is 1 to 6, and we're expecting about 385, and then we managed to train about 377 contractors in that regard, Chair. And then, of course, we also aimed at capacitating about 80 of our clients around the issues of IDMS, and when we managed to capacitate about 110 of those clients, Chair. The other performance information that we need to highlight, Chair, I think in terms of the highlights for 2023, what is the IDP we would like to highlight, that is the fact that if you're looking at the target that we set. We set up a 15 target, and then we're able to achieve 100% of those target, Chair, meaning that we're able to actually achieve as our initial plans. And I think what also critical component, critical importance is to mention to the committee that the IDP in the past, we are not very much active in terms of our contract development. We were relying on our partners through our NCTP programs. And then I think now, Chair, with the new intervention of the build, we are now seeing a retraction in that regard. So we're able to train directly 377 contractors, and this number is expected to grow as we implement the build program. And also, Chair, to bring to the attention of the committee, ITP, we also started as part of our quality improvement team, a process of training contractors on construction management system, which is called CMS. And I think we started this in the current year, Chair. And our focus mainly, Chair, was as part of our responding to other issues, including the constitution, and as well as redress. We started with about 250 women, and then those 250 women contractors are being trained in terms of the particular CMS management system. And the aim, Chair, is to ensure that they are able to run sustainable companies, as well as making sure that they have proper systems in place, Chair. And CITP will work the journey with them. We also worked closely with the Department of Public Works, as well as the President, on contributing to the economic reconstruction and recovery plan, which will be making its way to the Parliament. And I think CITP contributed significantly in that regard. And I think our focus was around increasing government spend against the budget through client training and capacitation and driving enterprise skills and development, and through infrastructure projects. And the Chair, you also recall that we also monitor the spend by government in that regard. We're able to actually inform and advise government on those issues. And then, of course, where the bottlenecks primarily around issues of tendering, as well as where tenders are not being put to the market, we're able to actually advise in that regard. We also hosted our fifth Empowerment and Recognition of Women Construction Award last month in August. In that regard, that focusing on ensuring that we are bringing the awareness of those women who are in construction, Chair, that at least they are given a spotlight in that regard. The CITP as well, we managed to play a critical role in the construction related skills competition, primarily the World Skills South Africa. And I think, Chair, in that regard, we are seeing fruit in that regard. I think the India BRICS summit that was held when it comes to the future skills CI South Africa through CITB initiatives, we managed to actually become number one, beating all the BRICS countries in that regard, and that's our CITB contribution, Chair. And if to continue, Chair, we're also continuing, Chair, with that particular aspect of skills development, and then of course our key focus is on the future skills, and we're also supporting the World Skills and BRICS as indicated, Chair. And as indicated, Chair, we did actually become number one, beating even in countries as China on future skills, primarily around issues of your BIM technology. As indicated, Chair, the CITP, we comment the issue of the CMS training, focusing on 350 women, Chair. Those are the pictures of the women who attended those trainings. And I think if you're looking at that particular training, Chair, it's focusing on SANS 13, 93, which is on the construction management system. And we do believe it's going to actually empower those women. We can see the minister, Chair, was part of our the event we held where we were acknowledging the role that is being played by the women in the industry. And I think it was a very a beautiful day, Chair. This, Chair, was the future skills where we won a gold in the Prince Future Skills, Chair, which was held on the 12th of September to the 15th of September in Nazareth. And the BMT team that was supported by CITB won, I think, a position in the gold, as well as also achieving notable awards through the competition, Chair. In terms of the quarterly monitoring, Chair, which I think is also important in terms of our advisory role, Chair, this is the report that we produce over the year, over the period. So we produce one quarterly, Chair, and it's a very informative, Chair, insofar as understanding the issues of the industry, as well as making sure that at least we do understand and advise accordingly our board, as well as our stakeholders in that regard. Chair. We also, as indicated, Chair, as part of our economic recovery, Chair, this is the information that I think was critical to the contribution that we made, where we looked at the budget spent by public sector, but at least the economic recovery is informed, Chair. Chair, if you're looking at the budget spent versus the actual implemented budget, Chair, over the years, if you're looking at, for example, looking at 2021, Chair, we can see that they have been sort of underspent, mainly from the state-owned entities within the region, Chair, of spending roughly about 27%, around 55% or so of their budget. And then, of course, we didn't underspend in that regard of about 30 or so. And the municipalities, Chair, as well, we also noted that of a budget of about 69, they will spend roughly about 47 billion, which means a million, which means that there is sort of a significantly underspend in that regard, Chair. And of course, we also note that the provincial department in that regard are fairly much doing much better, which followed by public entities in how they are spending the budget. This information is critical so that at least, Chair, when the country is planning on the rollout of projects, we can be able to understand exactly where to put focus and also understand the reasoning why they might be underspend in certain areas. And then if there's a need for us to open a bottleneck and through regulations, Chair, then we do that. And then, of course, advise where we can. We did host a sort of a state of the construction seminar, I think in the month of July, and I think as part of our view and how we're looking at things, we're able to actually identify that there were certain elements as well as causes within the tendering processes that maybe might need us to actually look at certain things in the future. As indicated, I think the state-owned companies and public entities collectively they account for 29% of the total public infrastructure budget, and municipalities, Chair, and community department account for 28% and 24% respectively, Chair, while national department and public-private partnership accounts around 9%. And I think what is very critical that we noted as well as indicated, we saw a sort of decline in the share that was of state of state in terms of the spend from almost 8% to about 30% in the following year. And those are the things that, Chair, we do have to try and understand and then reason with them. I think the first, if you can go back. I think we can move to the next one, David. I think if you're looking at as well what CITP does mainly is a tracking of the transformation agenda, Chair, which I think is something that is critical for. I think, Chair, the CEO can come through now. Mr. Lazar, you can come through with the permission of the Chair.
Thank you. Apologies for that. I had to shift offices and change devices and the network, Chair, because it has been delayed, Chair. But as Linda, the information, we have been tracking that also and also trying to have to make sure that our developmental initiatives respond to improving transformation, because it is quite important that we have sufficient numbers in grade 7, 8, and 9, because that's where most of the economic activities. So if we compare year to year, there is a slight improvement from 48% to 53% at grade 9. Those are the largest grades where projects above 200 million rand are done. But when you look at the targets for the current as a strategic planning cycle, which ends next year, we are meeting the targets of ensuring about 75% of construction companies in grade 7, 8, and 9 are black-owned. But we also set our own other targets to make sure that even at the various levels, we will meet that target. And we intentionally do not, when we do our average, do not include the grade 1 because they are many in numbers and they create a perception that vast majority of all construction companies are black owned, whereas the most economic activity happens at the higher grades. We can continue. And here we're looking at grades that are above, that ownership that is above 51% per person. Next slide. Next slide, EP. Oh, in terms of women ownership also, that's one area where we are still struggling to get to the 35% at the higher grade. Hence, you will see the emphasis when we do our developmental initiative to women-owned construction companies and when we also design contracted development programs to ensure higher participation of women-owned construction companies. Because we had a target of 2025, to get that to 35%, but we are currently sitting at 19% at grade 9, and then at grade 7 and 8, we are sitting at 25%. And all the things that will be added as regulation are amendments in order to improve the quality of contractors. The first beneficiaries will be women-owned construction companies in our developmental initiative through the build program chapters in the next slide. The centers, in terms of the research and development agenda, the centers of excellence that we have, we currently have one at the University of Johannesburg and are currently in process of establishing two additional ones in construction management related and quantitative surveying studies. They are quite an important aspect to ensuring that there is the human capital that is required in the industry. And in the human capital, in a sense that a lot of our master's, PhDs, and honor students, they go on to also teach mostly predominantly in historically disadvantaged universities. And we ensure that we partner universities like the University of Johannesburg with other universities, including University of Zululand, Wasasisulu University, and many other universities that might not have the research capacity. And we've been focusing also on training the digital engineering, and we're also looking at what relating to how to improve the tendering system. That's what we do through the Centers of Excellence. But also CIDB conducts research of its own. And in the year under review, we concluded two studies. One was on tender cancellation as it relates to cost and time. And then we were capacitating infrastructure clients as to how to avoid some of the administrative mistakes that happened that resulted to tender cancellation, because it's quite costly for the industry. And we're also highlighting other aspects that should assist us to inform policy, where we find that in tender cancellations, there's also unethical behavior that is happening in that. The second aspect was dealing with the cost so that we can make recommendations also at the policy level as to who should bear those costs that result in tender cancellation. And we are still continuing with the additional research chapters. And those are the two research reports that we had produced, published, and also capacitated infrastructure clients on. Right? Yes, Chairperson, as the CFO has indicated, our biggest contribution to the economic recovery and reconstruction plan is on improving on the spending of infrastructure budget. And our main focus, because when we started off our strategic planning cycle, the biggest challenge was at local municipality level. Hence, our capacitation on infrastructure delivery management systems had been focusing on that. And we've seen a progressive improvement in that through the capacitation and handholding of clients when they are implementing major infrastructure budgets. So then we capacitated 110 clients on infrastructure delivery management systems, Chairperson. Next slide. Our second contribution, Next slide. Our second contribution to the economic recovery and the reconstruction and recovery plan is also improving on enterprise and skills development, and this is envisaged through our build program. Right now, we're still presenting on potential of the program if implemented fully and with the support committee, as it has happened in the past, where we are inviting clients to implement the standards. We envisage this providing developmental support to 1,000 contractors a year, or for the year that we have closed, we've developed 250 through this build program, but we want to develop 1,000 contractors a year on developmental support and ensuring expenditure on workplace training per year of about 450 million. And this again in partnerships with major clients like your Sandral, Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, IDT, and many other, ESCOM, and many other large contractors. And out of that, we've also developed a liner management system to capture and monitor the progress of these contractors to ensure that they are doing the various competencies that are required for their registration or certifications as artisans, technicians, engineers, built environment professionals. Right? Next slide, Ibish. Yes, in terms of the implementation of the build program, we've had to restructure ourselves quite extensively to ensure compliance and monitoring of the build program, because we do believe this is really a cornerstone for development in the industry. And we've had to sign also enter into partnerships with the likes of the Auditor General, National Treasury, and also Department of Labor, to ensure that all projects that should be implementing the build program are implementing it. We are still struggling with compliance of many infrastructure clients in flight in terms of the register of projects. Hence, we've established a compliance unit and the build unit to work together to ensure that we can take to task those clients that are not implementing the program. Some of the clients you'll find, for instance, Mangaung Metropolitan Municipality, they've moved from, in the previous years, from 100% compliance to 45% compliance. Hence, we've issued, in line with IGR principles, notices of contravention, and are taking some clients through process of disciplinaries, if you can call it that, to ensure that we can improve compliance. The build program will really only succeed if all clients are implementing the program, and we are working hard in terms of, punishing those that do not comply, because it is law now, and those that are doing well, we reward those. Thank you, Chair. Continue. And this is a continuation of terms of compliance to the register of projects. You can go to the next slide. Next slide. In terms of governance and performance, the major concern for us was that of the Auditor General opinion from the previous financial year of 22, where we got a qualified opinion on a technicality on how we estimate revenue that should be coming from infrastructure clients. And we differed with this and went to court to try and resolve that. And then we went back to mediation with the AG, and we found each other in terms of how the estimation of the revenue for the project. So in terms of governance, we got an unqualified opinion with not many matters of materiality. Supply chain and performance information, there were no material audit findings. You can continue. The only remaining, next slide. The only remaining area where there was a material findings was on the annual financial statements, was on the financial statements, in the sense that we concluded our discussions with the AG during the course of the audit. We went through a process of convincing each other on the best approach for infrastructure projects, on how estimation ought to be done. And it was during only that process that we were able to convince each other on the most appropriate approach. Hence, they've registered a material finding, because we had to do adjustment on the financial statement during the course of the year, Chairperson. Next slide. We are implementing all the AG recommendations because, again, those were also discussed quite effectively. And we are presenting also our progress again that has been developed and approved by the board to the audit committee, and we will continue to do so, including the internal audit recommendations that we receive from our assurance providers, Chairperson. Right? Chairperson, through you, I would like to ask the CFO to take us through the financial, Chairperson, if that is allowed. Chair.
CFO.
Thank you, CEO, and thank you, Chair. Chair, once more again, I think I will be taking you through the financial statement of the CITP. I think, Chair, in terms of the financial management, our responsibility is to ensure that we do manage and manage our budget as well as ensuring that the resources that CITP is assigned to it are managed optimally, and then of course through collaboration with our other entities, we're able to use the resources that we have from government in the best mechanism that we can, Chair. And of course, our future focus, as the CEO indicated, we do see sort of a big requirement that I think even maybe from the committees of support as well, help us in the improvement of the field bank collections, Chair, which I think is one of the issues that, Chair, is keeping us a bit awake at night, because I think that's where we are still lacking behind. Yeah. In the Chair, of the issue of the revenue, Chair, we have two main streams of revenue, Chair. We've got what we define as revenue from non-exchange transaction, as well as revenue from exchange transaction, Chair. From the revenue from exchange transaction, Chair, the budget, if you're looking at in the comparison to the previous year, Chair, we collected about 50 million or so from assessment fees, Chair. Then the other income, Chair, was about only just slightly about 1,000 rand, Chair. Then, of course, finance income, which is the money that we receive from investing CITP resources, Chair, was 10 million, which is an improvement of about 6 million from the previous year. And, Chair, we do also understand that there have been sort of an improvement in terms of the repo rate, as well as the prime rate, which has been affected and implemented by the Reserve Bank from time to time, Chair. So as a result, we also benefited in that regard, so we did notice a significant improvement. But if you compare the total revenue from exchange transaction from the previous year, so we have moved from 57 million to 60 million, and I think that's largely, Chair, the contribution is what we have received from the finance income, Chair. From the revenue from non-exchange, Chair, we received almost 80 million from government, which is an improvement of about 2 million, Chair, from the previous year, which does represent about 3% or so. And then, of course, if you're looking at the revenue, Chair, which I think is part of our focus area as CITP for the purpose of development, we recorded about 122 million, Chair, in the current year, and that's an increase from about 53 million in the previous year. Lastly, Chair, about 70 million improvement in us registering and recording this revenue, which is referred as a bill, Chair. We have about 120 contractor fine, Chair, which was imposed on one of our clients. And then, of course, annual fees, Chair, that we received from the registering of our contractors, almost doubled from the previous year, from 46 million to 89 in the current year. And then, Chair, service in kind, Chair, which amount to the rental free that we get from sister entities, Chair, was about 1.4 million in the current year. Total revenue, Chair, was about 353 million, Chair, in comparison to the previous year, about 237, giving sort of about 120 million or so in improvement, Chair, in the previous year's Chair. Then, Chair, if you're looking at the total expenditure, Chair, total expenditure also slightly increased, Chair, from 194 million to 224, being slightly about total expenditure, being mainly an improvement, Chair, in your employee benefit cost where, Chair, we did fill certain vacancies that say that we were vacant in the current year, primarily around the issues of the build, the revenue, where we're compensating the structure, as well as bringing sort of our leadership within the province itself. So as a result, our staff increased from 111 million rand to about 224, which accounts mainly for most of the increases, Chair, if you're looking at from year to year comparison. And then, of course, if you're looking at depreciation, Chair, 4.3, and remember, 4.3 from 3.5, then, of course, in the current year, Chair, with the very a fully resourced board, so it's also increased in that regard, Chair. Finance income, Chair, is in the same range as the previous year. And, of course, if you're looking at debt impairment, it's in the same range, Chair. Then operating expenses, Chair, also moved from 75 to 91. Then giving us a surplus of about 128 million share in the year under review before we take in gains and losses. And after, if we take the gains and losses share, which was related to our disposal of some of our assets, we closed the books with a surplus of about 127 million share. And it's critical to mention, Chair, that the huge bulk of this surplus pertains to the build fees, Chair, which is ring fence primarily for the purposes of development, Chair. Maybe you can move to the next slide. Chair, as indicated, I think if you're looking at the surplus, comparing to the previous year, as indicated, is mainly built revenue. So if you just check the 127 that we made in the surplus, then you take you minus the 121 that we built as for build, then you just gonna get to the real surplus. From the surplus, from the balances point of view, sir. CITP currently have a surplus base of about 519 million, and then of course if you compare to the previous year, Chair, we were sitting with about 369 million, Chair. So technically speaking, we've seen sort of an improvement in our asset base, Chair, asset base. And I think if you're looking at mainly, Chair, where the money is coming from, Chair, we do have sort of a big increase in our non-exchange debt, Chair, from 49 million to about 156 million, Chair. And mainly, Chair, is the debt data book leads to our money being owed by the sister department or public sector clients that are implementing build but have not paid us. As a result, Chair, we see a huge significant growth on our data book, Chair, as a result of that, Chair. And then, of course, Chair, if you're looking at the current asset, Chair, is about 379 in comparison to about 233 from the previous year, and as indicated, the biggest jump comes mainly from that money that being owed through the build implementation fee, Chair. If you go to non-current assets, Chair, non-current assets, Chair, still within the same range, from 135 in the previous year to 139 in the current year, Chair, with slightly an improvement in the intangible assets, Chair. Under liabilities, our liabilities have remained within the same range, Chair. From the previous year, Chair, we're carrying about 119 million or so of liabilities, and in the current year, Chair, it's moved to about 125, and it does at least give us a sort of comfort as CITB or now going concern to say CITB can cover the liabilities of 4 times using it. Balance it, meaning our current asset ratio, Chair, is 4-1 as a stand, which it does indicate that CITB is in a very stable financial situation. As a result, Chair, we're sitting with a total net asset or retained what's called equity of about 394 million, and that's in comparison to about 249 the previous year. Chair, I think with the permission of the CEO, I will then leave my presentation at that, Chair. No, thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Sita. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much, DM and the Chairperson of our board and all members of Parliament. That's the end of our presentation. We would be happy to engage in any parts of the presentation or any parts of the report, Chairperson. And we truly appreciate the insight that emanates from discussion.
Thank you, CEO and CFO, for this presentation, detailed, in fact, starting from the chairperson in his introductory remarks. I think just before I allow honourable members to come in, I think we really appreciate the fact that we have improved in terms of Auditor General. So on that one, it's something that we are all proud of. Honourable Silo, Honourable Tring, those are the two hands that I can see so far. Honourable Van Skalvik, Honourable Mjobo, in that order, Honourable Members.
Thank you, Chairperson, as I lower my hand. And thank you to the Chairperson of the Board, and thank you to the CEO as well as the CFO for a positive presentation in as far as the Auditor General's report is concerned in respect of the CIDB. Chairperson, what I mostly want to welcome in as far as the presentation is concerned, as noted in slide 8, is the 100% of the invoices that are paid within a 30-day period. This is indeed a welcome development, and I must commend the entity in achieving this, because many of the companies that do work with entities are small companies that do depend on the financing or the paying of invoices within a 30-day period. As such, then making sure that our SMMEs are able to continue providing services towards the department. I also welcome the achievement of the 100% achievement of all the progress as highlighted by the Chair and the CEO, as well as the CFO. On slide 8, Honourable Chairperson, I want to check with the entity in terms of what the CIDB found in as far as, or rather, what the intentions of the program in as far as fraud and prevention awareness entails. What does that entail? What is the significance thereof? Particularly considering, Chairperson, that within the industry, we are currently under siege from the construction mafia. I further want to ask the question in relation to that as to, of the contractors or the within the industry rather, what has been the impact of that particular phenomena that has affected our country and has taken well over close to 60 billion within the construction industry? In terms of the monitoring and evaluation that has been conducted, what did the CIDB find that was either advancing the industry or leading to setbacks within the industry? And what did the CIDB anticipate to discover in as far as this particular monitoring and evaluation is concerned? In as far as the research and development is concerned, that is highlighted on slide 23, I just want to check whether the research reports that were highlighted, the two research reports, are accessible on the CIDB website, or how the committee can be able to access those, or if they can be forwarded to us, because I think those are important and brilliant reports that we should be able to go through and understand what some of those issues entail. The CEO, if I'm not mistaken, on slide 29, did indicate that they did go to court to challenge that particular finding by the AG. I want to know at what cost that was, and whether there was any decision, or was that the court decision that led to the mediation between the CIDB and the Auditor General in as far as the audit outcome is concerned. I want to again reiterate, Chairperson, my sentiments around the improvement in terms of the AG report regarding CIDB, and hope that other entities within the department are able to then take lead in as far as, well, take the CIDB as a point of reference as part of best practice in as far as balancing their books is concerned, albeit with, of course, some of the challenges that were highlighted by the Chair and the CEO that still remain an Achilles tendon to the entity. But wish them well and hope for a improved presentation. It can never be completely 100%, but hope for a year-on-year improvement, and wish them all the best. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Sihlalo. Honourable Tring?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I want to encourage you to take some lemon, honey, ginger for fighting flu. It is a natural remedy that works for many people. And I hope that you recover soon, Chair. Chair, firstly, we want to welcome the improvement in the audit outcomes, as well as the stability of the cash flows, which places CIDP as a going concern. This in the context of noting the challenges of PMTE as a going concern. So we welcome the improvement, Chair, in the audit outcomes. I think we also want to just congratulate and welcome the attainment of all of the targets being met, all targets that were set being met. I think it's a welcome presentation and kind of like a breath of fresh air as regards to some of the other reports that we've been having to deal with. We also welcome the note that the divisional performance on programs is impressive. So another feather in the cap of CIDB. And well, obviously, Chair, congratulations to our team on their success at the BIM conferences, and we wish them further success going ahead. Chair, I have now perhaps just three questions after all of the congratulations. But my first question is what interventions, if any, are in place to assist our municipalities and SOEs to improve their percentage of infrastructure spend, knowing that, you know, infrastructure spend is key to growing employment, reducing our unemployment, and improving the lives of our people on the ground. But if our municipalities and our state-owned enterprises are incapable or unable to spend budgets that are allocated to them with regards to infrastructure, and I know that this is not necessarily the CIDB's mandate, but obviously there are talks, and if you could just inform what are some of those talks with regards to improving the situation to help our municipalities and state-owned enterprises to improve their percentage of infrastructure spend. My second question is the success within the PhD student program, and it's encouraging to note that some of them actually go into the schools and the disadvantaged areas. But I'm also afraid that we also lose many of these PhD students. So to other, either to the private sector or to other countries. So has there been or is there some kind of longitudinal study or program to track these PhD students? How long do they actually stay in the system, in other words? And then my last question has to do, I suppose, not necessarily your construction mafia, but just the ability of some construction companies to avoid some legal processes where they are given a particular tender, like the one of Mr. Sodi in the Free State, given a tender to build or to refurbish a prison, fails to do so, and pockets some 130 million according to the Sowetan, and another tender, another company then has to be found. Time is gone, money is lost, and one also notes that this particular individual changes the name of the company G5 and failed again at the waterworks treatment program plant in Tswane, where we've actually had the cholera outbreak. Now, if we are not able to put the brakes on these particular construction companies who continually fail our departments, change the names and sometimes directors, and then are given a tender again, and they continue to fail, we ourselves then, and this particular department finds itself then being complicit in that in those failures. So what has been done to prevent these construction companies from failing and in the process causing harm to the very poor on the ground? Thank you, Chair.
I'm next, Chair. Can I?
Thank you, Honourable Trink. Honourable Fascalvic, you are next. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to Honourable Chairperson, members, our staff members, as well as the departmental officials. And thank you very much for this. Honourable Trink took my words because I wanted to say it's a breath of fresh air. And we really appreciate all the efforts that has been made, Chairperson. Over the period of the past 4 years, we've been continuously engaging the department and its entities on different issues, and it's just so encouraging to see the current state of the affairs in terms of the CIDB. So we want to congratulate them on their performance, 100% performance and a continuous improvement in the efforts that they've made. Specifically, Chairperson, I'm looking at the 250 women contractors that were trained, and I'm pleased to see that. So my question is then, when you look at the vision in terms of the CIDB, it also mentioned transformation. Transforming the construction industry. So can we be enlightened in terms of the current state of affairs, what is going on to ensure that vision is materialized? And when we look at the contractor, women contractors that were trained, are you just training them, or are you also assisting them in terms of placement or absorbing them in the system? Chairperson, we note with appreciation the efforts in terms of the revenue collection, and to see the 12.5 million rand revenue increase, it's really appreciated. So we know, Chairperson, revenue collection is a challenge across departments, and we need to see at least that this entity share their best practices in terms of this area of performance, or at least with the entities and the department within the DPWI. When we see, Chairperson, yet again the contractor development program, which is close to my heart, that the target was 36 and the performance was 71, doubling the target. It's also appreciated. Also note, Chairperson, the internal control measures being instituted to address prior year audit findings. Under other reports, Chairperson, I see that the results of the financial investigation from the SIU has not been received. So can we request the department to do the entity to do a follow-up in that regard and share the information with us also? Then, Chairperson, lastly, the entity has a very low vacancy rate. I think it stands at 8%, and it's also welcoming. It's far below the current norm, but we also want to urge them to try as far as possible to fill those vacancies, and so that we see the department joining the effort in fulfilling that our unemployment rate decrease. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll pause there.
Thank you, Honorable Van Schalkwyk. Honorable Jobo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to welcome the report and congratulate the CIDD on 100% performance. And thank you for the 250 women. And I'm very happy when you talk about women. But just one question. If they, the 250 women own the contractor on construction, and what about the youth and disability? I didn't see anything on their presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Jobo. I'm covered by the my colleagues, the honorable members. I had written down only one question that as much as we appreciate that women are empowered, and especially that you were focusing on ensuring that they at least move up a grade higher. We have seen even in other entities and in the department when they report, when it comes to people living with disabilities, you will find that sometimes they usually say that they didn't get, and we know that there are many, and we know that some are emerging contractors. So my question would be, in adding to what Honorable Jobo is saying, what is your plan about people with disabilities and young people in this issue of training? Thank you so much. Thank you, Honorable Trink, for that advice. This fever is not getting better, it's getting worse. Thank you. Over to you, Chairperson, CEO, CFO.
Thank you, Chair. Just before my team starts to respond in detail, there are quite a few issues which I would like to touch on and perhaps sensitize the committee in terms of some of the challenges that we experience based on the questions that have been asked. Fraud and corruption, Chair, remains a problem for us even at the CIDB. And this touches on many issues that have been raised by the committee members, especially when it relates to the defaulters, the contractors' defaulters. And one of the things that the minister, in our first engagement, I take it in his oversight in visiting some of the projects, he picked up that the quality of some of the contractors that are doing this project is of concern. And it all leads back to how did we actually register a contractor that is actually failing and defaulting and actually doesn't meet the requirements. There seems to be a gap, and he actually gave us, that was his, one of his tasks to give us, to say, let's look at this problem in isolation and see what solutions we can bring about. It becomes a crime issue, Chair. It doesn't become a real CIDB issue, and kind of leaves us in a very bit of an awkward situation, because now it means we need to rely on other departments and so on and so on. But however, we are embarking on that process to try and see internally within CIDB how can we limit the scourge, because it is a problem that many projects, and obviously it does affect service delivery, where contractors do not complete because they do not qualify, or they have a good grading, yet on site they do not exhibit that experience and knowledge. So these are some of the areas that are for concern for to us. Also, Chair, you will also recall, especially you, Chair, when we went to Singapore, the success of the entities and how there was much reliance on the entities in executing the objectives of the government. A lot of reliance there is given to the entities in terms of them doing the execution. With CIDB, it is the case, and a lot of our stakeholders rely on us in providing answers as to some of the challenges that exist. some of them, let's say, being procurement challenges, some of them being the construction mafia, some of them being the training that has been mentioned. We are somehow, in terms of our scope, limited. For instance, yes, we can facilitate the training because that falls within our mandate in terms of the development of the industry. However, we are short in ensuring that the people that are trained are actually doing the work because we as CIDP do not embark on projects. So it really needs some kind of overhaul. Also in procurement issues, we get a lot of questions around what are you doing with transformation initiatives, and yet there's a tussle behind the scenes between the CIDP and Treasury that has the role of overseeing the procurement bill, etc. And you'll be shocked, as we sit here, Chair, CIDP has no sight of the procurement bill only 9 days before it was presented to Parliament. Our inputs were not taken, and because that seemed to have been a Treasury document. So it is a bit of a frustration because issues of procurement come back to CIDP and CIDP needs to answer. And yet we find ourselves very restrained in terms of influencing our solutions. And it's a bit unfair because sometimes we actually have the research in terms of the cancellation of tenders as one of our research. Obviously, those recommendations could form part of a procurement structure that we know, and we could instill certain objectives to ensure that procurement is more effective and that there's a limitation in terms of cancellation of tenders and so forth. So we are really constrained in certain issues, and I just want to sensitize the members that we are working in that environment. CE, I think you would perhaps then deal with the more detailed questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Committee Chair, for the opportunity. Thank you for Chair. Yes, going to Honorable Estilo's questions regarding 100% payment of invoices here. We also instituted the process of ensuring that all compliance invoices, if they are received by Tuesday, they'll be paid by Friday. So our average for payment of invoices is actually around 10 days for compliant invoices, because we understand cash is the lifeblood of any businesses. In terms of fraud and corruption, Chairperson, we believe that we also need to make sure that as a CIDP, we're a reputable organization where we will root out fraud and corruption. So in addition to the workshops that we host and the awareness campaigns, we've also taken a zero tolerance approach to fraud and corruption, and have, unfortunately, in the past also have had to dismiss staff members and deregister contractors where we had found evidence of fraud being perpetrated during the process of registration. And we were using that also as a deterrent to others from committing similar actions, because when a construction project fails, it's not just the money that is lost, but it's employment opportunities and also service delivery that is much needed by our communities. In terms of the impact of construction mafias on site, Minister Zikalala and also Deputy Minister Swart has also indicated really the significant impact of that in terms of delayed execution of projects and also projects becoming more expensive to execute. And in some instances where there has also been loss of life when these the sites are disrupted, but we've there is work being done also on the preventative aspect and also the punitive aspect through the collaboration by the government with IDT. We are also accelerating the implementation of a social facilitation that is done properly to ensure that communities are taking ownership. It's fine later on as a criminal aspect than working with the law enforcement agencies to deal with that particular issue. But we have capacitated infrastructure clients also on how to do proper social facilitation in order to ensure that where there are business opportunities and genuine business consulting companies in communities, they can benefit from that, and also the employment of the people in the areas. I try and look at as much as possible. In terms of our monitoring and evaluation report on transformation, what we have seen as one of the major issues that impact also on transformation, it is a slow rollout of quite a few important things that we must note as administrators as we undertake projects. So it's a slow rollout of projects, and also payment on time is also killing construction companies and disproportionately killing black-owned construction companies, because in some instances we have a lot of access to the work within the public sector. Hence, again, the proposal on the CID Act amendment to also include the private sector so that there are more opportunities. And then the other aspect where we also are taking both client and infrastructure and contractors, that is also impacting on transformation, is the arbitrary interpretation of construction contracts, which in most cases was at a disadvantage, especially in the lower grade contractors, where sometimes they are either abused by the main contractors or by the clients as to not when there are changes in contract. So in also when we standardize our documents for tendering, which is what we also do, is that we are trying to also educate both clients and infrastructure clients. The research reports that we have done are available on our website, but I will also make sure that they are sent to the committee through the secretary of the committee, because it also shares important insights that if we implement the recommendations, more infrastructure clients implement the recommendation, we will see a faster pace, a faster rollout of projects. On slide number 25, yes, I made reference to the court action. We had decided through the board resolution to litigate against the AG when our dispute resolutions was not working. And then we filed papers on two occasions. The AG requested additional time to file their responding affidavit until the AG and the deputy AG themselves intervened to say, let us start on a new process the new process of finding each other, if you can call it that, which proved helpful because the AG also got a better understanding on how to audit against the infrastructure standards that are set by the CIDP, and how infrastructure procurement, how infrastructure budgeting works. And then in that case, then we had to agree to drop the case when we had resolved the issue after having discussions. And I think both entities, both the AG and ourselves, came out of that, especially with the research that we had done and the expert opinions that we had done, both entities benefited better to understand how infrastructure works. And I will ask for, I'll confirm with the office, but I think the cost of that was roughly $500,000, Chairperson. But I'll get the exact figure, Chairperson, from the CFO on that, Chairperson. But again, both entities, I believe, benefited from the expert opinions that we received and also the legal opinions around these particular issues. Honorable King, thank you very much for the comments. Yes, in terms of the BIM capacitations and the conferences, our CFO has confirmed, Chairperson, the costs were 525,000, Chairperson. Yes, it's quite important because, you know, we will not talk of any smart A4IR without the proper information management systems and platforms. Hence, we want to spearhead working with the BRICS Future Skills, the curriculum development, and the training of young people into BIM, because that will be the basis for any, and we were quite happy that our our participants performed so well. And I have to note, this was not solely done by the CIDP. The department and the ministry through professional services also contributed greatly to this, both financially and providing the skills for people to be able to train and also compete in this. So it is an ongoing process. We've developed the BIM roadmap for the country. We are developing the curriculum, and then we are also training on that. In terms of interventions to assist SOEs and municipalities to spend, yes, we do that in a number of ways, Honorable Trent. One of them is the capacitation processes, and we take it beyond just, a classroom type setting to saying this is how infrastructure delivery management system works, this is how tender documents and specifications are developed. Because over the years, we interact with more clients, we get a list of where are the areas where most clients fail. So we've now also adopted some clients where will assist them even in the process to make sure that they are doing it right. There's less risk in the document, in the tender documents, for those awards to be challenged, to make sure they are clear, they are transparent, and also they are competitive in that sense. And we also are writing a lot of guidelines for clients through our practice notes to say, for instance, we'll develop a standard tender document for infrastructure so that most people are working around the same issues. And we've been issuing guidelines on also how to conduct site briefings so that there's no complaints also on that as to saying the process was unfair. So in order to increase the expenditure, it is really through capacitation and also direct involvement in helping those infrastructure clients. And we wanted to focus we had focus on local municipalities, and then now SOEs are also a huge focus, because initially the assumption was there's a lot of capacity in SOEs, these mistakes don't happen that much, but we are assisting in that, Chairperson. In terms of the study of how long our PhD graduates sit within universities in terms of after they graduate. We have not conducted that study, but I would be more than happy to conduct a study and provide the information to the university. But one thing I know for sure is that, for instance, if you look at Walter Sisulu University, the head of department of the construction management team is a beneficiary of this partnership through the Center of Excellence. Nelson Mandela, is also another brilliant South African PhD graduate who's there. There's also the deputy director of the Center of Excellence at the University of Johannesburg itself is also a product of this. But we will have to, I think it's quite important that we do that longitudinal study to be able to see also if there's any intervention that we can put in to make sure that more people benefit. Because the important thing is that sometimes the historically disadvantaged universities struggle to attract, academics with PhDs, hence the students that they also suffer in terms of the accreditation of these programs. So we thought it would also be an important aspect to support, at least at the level of ensuring that the lecturers are qualified, and also the TV College lecturers who've also made a contribution that so that as they teach our young people, they are teaching them best practice. And we know that our historically disadvantaged universities are the home for many of the black students and those that were also historically disadvantaged. But we will have to look at that and also see how we can better support in that area. In terms of construction companies to avoid fraudsters returning on our register, this was something that actually the board was seized with quite a bit at the beginning of the term, because our legislation currently only allows us to deregister a company but not deregister a director. The directors can be dealt with at national treasury level, because what we don't want is exactly what you've highlighted, Honorable King, to saying, a director in this company, they do something wrong, and then they move and open another outfit and continue doing business. But our legislation currently is limiting in that we can deregister a company and have deregistered a few, but the director, the individual directors currently, how do we better deal with that? aspect, because I would assume the behavior that happened in Company A will continue in Company B if it's still the same leadership. And also on avoiding extensive legal costs to construction companies when they're disputing award, we submitted the feasibility study on establishing of a construction ombudsman, chairperson, to the minister also for consideration, because it's also something that could be very useful to avoid protracted litigation when awards are being challenged, especially on simple technicalities, chairperson. Honourable Chairperson, again, those are reaffirming comments. In terms of the women-owned construction companies that we've started focusing on, one major aspect that we've also been trying to do to ensure that there is access to work is the establishment of proper and working contractor development program. The first step was to develop the guidelines on how to establish a contractor development program, which we had concluded, and then it requires a policy. From the entity, and we've also developed the model policies, and we are assisting the entities. We've just concluded with the KZN Department of Transport in terms of re-establishing their contractor development program. And then, so when we move from the training aspect to the certification aspect, they have access to real life projects. And IDT also has established a wonderful and very ambitious contractor development program working together with the CIDB. So it's quite important that we provide those opportunities, as you've correctly noted. We will follow up on the SIU investigation and the report back to the committee when we receive that particular information from the SIU chairperson. And the vacancy rate, yes, we are committed to capacitating our structure, because we do have ambitious targets, because we believe construction can really be the cornerstone for the economic recovery and the reconstruction of the country, Chairperson. Honourable Jobo, I will, in terms of the numbers, in terms of mention of youth and people numbers, but in terms of programs, when we piloted the first implementation of the build program, we intentionally focused on women, in a sense that when post-COVID, those were the companies that we felt were impacted, well, that were impacted the most in terms of dropping in grade and access to work. But we have full commitment in actually supporting and developing all the designated groups, the chairperson. And it goes to the chairperson's comments also in terms of Chairperson, in terms of people with disability, Chairperson, we do have our build development strategy. I think we will have to also share it with the committee because it highlights also all the other aspects that we intend to do. This was just a start based on the monies that we had collected in the previous financial year, but we have huge ambitions. We've started also now in this financial year in assessment of prior learning so that we can do top-up training to ensure that we improve the quality of our contract, because there has been a cry to saying our contractors are not that competent. So what we did was we proposed amendments to our regulations to ensure that competency also is also part of the requirements in order to register, so that we can retain the grades as a tool for risk mitigation. And the build program, we don't want to create any barriers, but we want to create opportunities for people to upskill themselves so that they can also grow within the grade. And the build program is really famous on that. So to deal with fraud and corruption, again, we've partnered with the South African Police Service in order to be able to register cases and have trained them and the NPA on how to speedily prosecute such cases, Chairperson. And I think they've noted those in the report, Chairperson. I'm not sure, Chairperson, if there is one aspect I have missed, and I will find the link to the report to be shared with the committee, Chairperson. I thank you, all, Chair.
Thank you, CEO. I think you have covered almost everything that has been raised. Let me check the chat. Okay. Or the issue of e-access to the research reports from Honorable Sisolo. I'm just checking on the chat group. I think you can assist that by sending us how do we access those reports. If there is a link, you send it to us so that we'll share with all the members of the committee, especially if they are public reports. Even if they are not public reports, then you send the reports to us so that we share with the members of the portfolio committee. Not sure whether are there any follow-up questions, honourable members. In the absence of the follow-up questions, as the portfolio committee, we are proud that an entity of the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, in which we are playing oversight role, improved in their audit outcomes. I think you will remember that when we were dealing with the audit outcomes last year, when you received qualified audit opinion, this committee proved questions, some that were not so comfortable, but we were always saying that there is a scope for improvement. And again, this entity, it also needs to ensure that women are not only on grade 1 and grade 2, but you have done this, and we also, we were invited, but then we were not allowed to come and attend your awards that on women contractors, something that would have been happy to participate in, but we saw that program. So we are really happy and are proud this improvement, and you have made us proud. I know that the M and Minister are proud, but also as the Portfolio Committee, whenever we see that one of the entities that we're playing oversight role on has done so well, we are also so proud. It's just small things that you need to tighten up so that we don't even have these matters that are raised by Auditor General. You just get a clean audit. Looking forward to that next year. We may not be part of the committee. You will have another committee next year because it will be after elections. But we're looking forward because we have an interest. We will look, even if we just look on the document, that you will be having a clean audit with no matters at all. The link that you have sent, we can see it, but remember, some of us, we can't take it from here. Please send it to Lwazi, and then Lwazi will share with us. Lwazi of our acting secretary. DM, DM was kicked out, but Lwazi said that she admitted it again. DM, do you have any closing words?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. We also would like to join the Portfolio Committee in indeed congratulating the CITP for the very stunning job that they've done, and that we are also saying that they should not relax. They should work harder, tighten all the systems they've put in place, and we are indeed looking forward to them having a clean audit in the next financial year, and that in all the programs where they need to put extra efforts that they are going to do so. And that indeed, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we are supporting the CITP in the programs that they are running, especially in their training programs. And that, Chair, we are all working very hard with the entities that are providing physical construction programs like the CITP and the IBT itself, that we should indeed have guidelines and strict measures in place that before any project starts, we would have done a lot in terms of avoiding construction mafia interference, that any project before it starts, would rather delay the start of a project to avoid interference of the construction mafia, and that the socialization program should at a stage reach a level where we actually have a policy and we actually have a tight program that will assist us in socializing projects in communities before they start. And we also welcome all the comments made by the portfolio committee and would like to thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, just one point. I think it was on the comments of CFO. This collaboration and working together with IDT, I think DM, it is a good thing that the entities that are in your department should work together for the good of all South Africans and to assist each other. I think what they have started, I hope that it will spread even to other entities. If there is a gap where these entities can assist each other, I think what they have started is good. Maybe we will see as we get reports of how this integration and this assisting each other is going to yield. But I think it is a good thing. Honorable members, thank you again for your informed questions, probing questions, constructive deliberations when we are dealing with our entities. And as also the portfolio committee playing our oversight, being watchdog, I really appreciate what you are doing today. Please bear with me on my hoarse voice. My fever is worse today. We are adjourning for now, and we will come back at 12:30. Because we have said we will have a meeting at 12:30, we can change and bring it nearer. We can log out, but use the same logging details or the link when you want to log for the 12:30 meeting. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairperson.
Yes, Lazi.
Yes, we are correcting, Chair.
Okay, Lazi.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee of Public Works and Infrastructure, Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure, Deputy Minister, Chairperson of the Board of CBE, the CEO of CPE, Chairperson and the board members that are part of the meeting, CEO and the management of CPE, good afternoon to you. This is the last entity that we are going to be dealing with as part of us preparing the BRRR. Being informed, of course, by the audit outcomes, as we had a meeting earlier on in which the Auditor General detailed the performance of this department and its entities. We welcome you back, those that were with us in the morning, and welcome you, CPE, the Chairperson and the Board, CEO and the Management. I now invite you to present to us the report. Dr. Msizi, or maybe let's allow the Chairperson first to introduce the report. Let's allow the Chairperson before you, a CEO.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon to you and to the honourable members of the Portfolio Committee of the Public Works and Infrastructure. We would like to take this opportunity to thank you for giving us this opportunity to come and present the annual results for the Council of the Built Environment. With me, I've got the delegations from the Council of the Built Environment. We've got myself as chairperson of the board. We've got the deputy chair, Ms. Maraka. We've got the CEO of the Built Environment, Dr. Msizi Mieza, and the executive committee of the Built Environment, Ms. Tabata Zimoyo, our chief transformation officer. We've got Ms. Sari Tribi, the chief financial officer. We also have Ms. Tabisa Mutaji, chief shared services officer, and Mr. Manamela, Kuti Manamela, the manager for monitoring and evaluation. So we'll take you through the CBE submission, to which it will be presented by Dr. Mieza. Thank you once again for giving us the opportunity. Dr. Mieza, I hand over to you. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairperson Tomongwane and committee members. I also like to greet the Minister, Minister Zikalala. I also like to greet Deputy Minister Benny Swart, Chairperson and the Deputy Chairperson, Acting DG, as well as my colleagues from Public Works, Mthombeni and the other colleagues. Chairperson, we'll fly through our presentation that was sent to the committee members, just to take you through some of the issues and the highlights of our deliverables that we've achieved in the last financial year. So the second slide really presents the context on what we'll be covering. And it's in 8 parts, but obviously some of the stuff we'll quickly go through them. And our main focus will be on item 5, performance information. And then we'll conclude with some of the governance matters and financial information. And also just reflect on some of the HR matters that we've confronted with. The next slide, Chair, I think it's important that obviously we state the obvious in terms of what it is that we've been called to present to you. Chairperson, over the past couple of years since I've been in the organization, one of the observations that one has made was that there is a limited understanding of not by the committee, but by the industry itself on where CBE is located within the broader scheme of things. So we thought it's important, Chair, that whenever we get platforms like this one, we restate what we thought initially was known, that CBE is one of the entities that falls within public works, accompanied by agreement SA, CIDB and IDT. I think my colleagues presented this morning, Udlala and the colleagues. And we're one of the entities that within the family of public works. Ours really is about driving the transformation of the professional, built environment professionals, as well as the sector itself. That's really what our mandate is about. Obviously, there are other things that we do in relation to the task that has been given to us by Parliament. So we try and make sure that, Chair, we use the platform to locate CBE in the broader context. The next slide really, Chair, what it does then, it then say within the CBE, we've got 6 professional councils that were approved in 2000 by the Act of Parliament, namely your architects, landscape architects, engineers, property valuers, and project managers and construction management profession, as well as quality surveying. In appreciating that the built environment profession is made up of a number of line functions or sectors or professions, we have then since entered into working relationships with the environmental practitioners. Normally they do EIAs, their water use licenses, they do environmental management reports before development can take place. We also entered into a working relationship with the South African Geomatics Council as well as town planners. Those two a council fall within the Rural Development and Land Affairs Ministry. The other one falls within the Environmental Ministry, Minister Baba Christie. So that's really what makes the CBE family. And the minister when he was composing or she was composing this current board, he went then further to nominate the additional members from these two councils, from these three additional councils, to serve as in terms of the CB Act, but not necessarily as representative of the other council. So that's really the context in which we're presenting our input. We started working around some of the programs that relate to those three councils to ensure that as we come to the committee, we begin to actually reflect on the work that they do, just so that we can give a comprehensive picture. The current annual report that we're presenting was anchored on three areas. That was about transformation or transforming the built environment sector, creating built skills environmental professions, working with universities, and the last one was about working with the previously disadvantaged individual, mainly women, and ensuring that we empower young people and also target people living with disability. That's really what anchored our program for the year under review. Obviously, the vision, I mean, as we conclude this term of office and the board has started re-envisioning CPE for the next administration. So some of the issues that we are looking into is the vision. But the one that we currently had was in relation to how do we use intelligence and be inclusive and adapt to the ever-changing environment for the future in the built environment sector. Our mission was really to regulate and advise the minister and in relation to some of the issues that are emerging from the built environment. And the last one was about, yes, we have a regulatory responsibility, but we need to ensure that there is value that is derived from the work that we do. And then the next slide, really what it reflects, it is basically that the work that we do has to then respond to the broader government programs and be guided by how government does its planning in terms of input, activities, and outputs and outcomes. I think our focus, depending on the intervention that we have, you'll note that some intervention will be input-driven, others will be activities, others we are actually targeting outputs or outcomes. For example, issues of transformation, you would have a series of engagement, a series of activities that would then result to a particular outcome. And I think that's how then we interchangeably use different mechanisms as and when it's necessary. And that framework is what frames the five areas that we actually have actually highlighted as part of the work that we need to do. The next slide, Chair, is then really the part A, which details our performance. Like any other public entity or government department, we need to have an administrative element in our APP. So the first part really is an admin work that we do, how to ensure that in the mandate that has been given to us through the CBE Act of Parliament, we are able to structure ourselves in a manner that will enable us to deliver on the programs. The next four programs really begin to thresh out some of the issues that we think are important, because as much as we want to pursue transformation, want to pursue professional registration, want to ensure that there is access, I think in the main, what professionals raise with us consistently is about programs that enable them to participate in the economy, because ultimately they have skills that need to be procured by either private sector or the public sector. How do we ensure that we create those mechanisms to enable them to participate in the economy? The third one relates to the skills and capacity development. It's an ongoing program. Usually we do this with councils, universities, public entities, and government departments. So there are a number of interventions that we do besides what is in the APP. The last two, one relates to research and advisory. One of the key mandates we have is to advise the minister and the ministry and government on some of the issues, one that relates to regulatory environment that impacts the built environment sector, two, on some of the future thinking that needs to be pursued. Recently, we had a climate change a conference, which was led by Minister Zikalala. I think in the main, is to say, as a built environment sector, we need to start thinking about the impacts of climate change on the work that we do. The last one is really the crux of why CPE exists. We are a regulator. We are an appeals authority of the built environment. If everything else were to be taken away from CBE in terms of the government agenda, the regulatory function of CPE will remain, because that's really what the anchor of the work that we do. This one really, Chair, is about the work that we do when there is either a member of the public, which unfortunately we're beginning to see members coming forward raising issues, be it of quality of work that is done by professionals, be it the manner in which our professional counsel handles some of the issues, be expanding our mandate beyond the urban areas. So Chair, out of the 18 indicators that we have, we only were able to achieve 15, which translates to 83%. I'll then tabulate that or explain some of those ones that we could not achieve, and maybe provide reasons that we were able to advance through Council. The other aspect here that we wanted to bring to your attention, obviously the year under review was also impacted not only by the budget cuts that we all experienced in the country, but I think CPE, because we depended mainly on the government fiscal, and so that has an impact on us mainly when some of the changes happen. The last two points relate to some of the executives' resignation that we experienced. Obviously, we were able to continue with the team that we had. Hence, then when we came to the committee, I think to present our fourth quarter report, we did indicate that we'll be recruiting, filling up those positions of the senior executives. Indeed, we have done that. So we had resignation around November, and by the beginning of the financial year, we had the fully fledged complementary staff, with an exception of the CFO, who started slightly later. But she was an internal candidate, so I think it was easy to transition. Chairperson, just to highlight some of the, in terms of program one, we had activities that were planned. We had four targets, and all of them were achieved. Those programs really were about how we govern the organization. And the other point here in relation to program one, which I think is something that sometimes we tend to downplay, in the context that it's taken for granted. CPE has, I mean, when I joined, I was advised by one of the committee members that you are joining a clean audit organization. I think it was you, Chairperson. And we've been able to sustain that. And this is our seventh consecutive clean audit as an organization. Obviously, our view is that it is important to ensure that our governance issues are up to date. But at the same time, we balance that with the mandate that has been given to us. So we are keeping our eyes on both, but ensuring that we don't drop the ball when it comes to clean audit and how we run the organization. So we continue with that, Chair. The next slide that I would like to reflect on is really about the work that we do. We've taken a posture, Chair, that we're not going to go on a marketing and communication drive, but we want to communicate the mandate and the work that CPE does. So when we talk about marketing and communication, it has to be understood in that context that we're not going to have billboards that say, hi, CPE is a government entity. We're going to say CPE is a government entity. This is what it does. And this is how we can assist you as a member of the public. This is how we can assist you as a professional. This is how we can partner with government in ensuring that we advance the mandate of government. So that's really the marketing program that we have adopted as an organization. The other point, Chair, is the issue about levies that we derive from professionals or from councils, and we're able to achieve some of the advances around it. The next slide, Chair, in relation to Program 2, it's really about the essence of what we're trying to do. One of the focus that we've actually pursued in the previous financial year was to begin the work around how do we not only empower women in the built environment, because we can't lament the fact that in our sector we've got 14% representation. The number keep oscillating between 14 and 15. But for the point I want to convey, we've got 14% representation in the built environment, which is a low number when you compare to the number of women in our in the country. However, we have taken a decision that we're going to actually have targeted intervention led by women obviously we participate in some of those programs as men in the industry. So we're able to convene a series of engagement wherein we discussing not only issues of tendering, but issues of how do you become a successful professional in the industry that is dominated by men. So women are giving each other advice. And we've seen an increase in terms of attendance. And the kind of feedback we get in chair, it's something that is giving us hope that indeed, if we continue at this rate, we'll be able to make advances and start flipping the numbers. And women will also feel part of the program that we are running. So chair, those are some of the series that we continue to have. It's not just engagement, but I think there are programs that we develop arising from that. The next one, chair, I think it's an area which is understated. We tend to have a celebratory event depending on the announcement made by government. But we have taken a conscious decision that in our sector, there are colleagues who are living with disability. And I think we need to find a mechanism of ensuring that we support them. Just to digress slightly, as we move towards the Disability Rights Month, we will be convening another engagement, which will be led by the ministry and the minister, to ensure that we bring to the fore the challenges, only not only challenges, but also the programs that we intend to implement through the Department of Public Works and other departments to support the colleagues that are living with disability. The next slide, Chair, Jefferson, it's just really a continuation. There was a program that we also implemented. At some point, Chair, we started, we had a number of young professionals or students who were never engaged with young people in universities, wherein they will raise issues, one, of access to funding. So we started a program with Phoenix, which was a program where we were trying to give opportunities for young people and raise funding. Unfortunately, Trey, we did not get traction in terms of raising enough funds to finance some of the students who had come forward to request support. But obviously, with the engagement we are having with the department, we've been able to kickstart the process of getting the department to support some of those young people who are currently studying, but they are not able to proceed with their studies. Through the intervention by the acting DG, we're able to place unemployed graduates within the real estate management department on a two-year program. And I think the DG, the DG will attest to the work that we want to do moving forward. There are other programs that the department is also trying to capitalize on this youth unemployment as part of creating space for young people in our profession. The next slide, Chairperson, really is a continuation on some of the work around the stakeholder engagement. We have transformative collaborative committees that we chair, that are chaired by the chairperson. And in the year, we're supposed to have three. Obviously, in terms of the timing of the appointment of the board, there were glitches in terms of when we can have. But we intend to continue having these engagements. But the TCF, which are mainly chaired by the chairpersons of different portfolios, be it on women empowerment, policy, skills development and health and safety, they continue to do the work and they report to council. We're intending to have a national stakeholder forum engagement in July, but it was postponed. And I think through the chairperson and the ministry, because there was a view that they would like the ministry and the deputy minister to come and address some of the issues that are impacting the industry, i.e. the procurement bill. One of the chairperson from the portfolio, from the TCF, was invited by the parliament to make a submission on the procurement bill arising from the work that is done by the team. So maybe that we've also shared that information with the ministry as well. The next slide, Chairperson, deals with the professional development and capacity. Basically, this work, when we started, the board at the time challenged us to adopt a DDM model in doing this work. And we then started to say, if there are 44 districts in the country, how best do we work through municipalities, working with other CETAs and public works to ensure that we cover a broad spectrum in exposing young people in the profession, but also in supporting municipalities, working with SAUGA around the structured candidacy program that we are running together with our council. Obviously, because the country is vast and CPE is we're based nationally, and we don't have enough footprint. And I think it's the work that we are beginning to do with the current board on how best do we make the CPE presence in 9 provinces using public works offices that exist currently, and also tapping into the other colleagues, like your CIDB, that's got present in different offices. So those are some of the modalities, Chair, that will enable us to broaden the accessibility of our profession. But also working with SAUGA, I think we are concluding an MOU with SAUGA to ensure that some of the partnerships on the work that we're going to do on candidacy, on placement of young professionals in municipalities and mentorship, we do it in partnership with different role players, but in a structured manner, because ultimately we have observed that some of the young professionals are placed in municipalities without mentors, and then they're not able to obtain their PR registration status. The next slide, Chairperson, will actually outline some of the work that we are doing with the School of Government in relation to specific programs that we want to target, especially public servants who are currently working around issues of project management, around issues of infrastructure delivery and procurement and entrepreneurship. Those are some of the programs that, as part of professionalizing the public sector, we'll be working with the NSG to do this work. And we will be starting at the, in the Department of Public Works. The meetings between ourselves, NSG, and the acting DG are already in full swing, because the minister made some commitments that there will be work that will be done within the department through the CPE and NSG. So that's really the broader context here in relation to this the area. The next point, next slide, Chairperson, is around the research and knowledge. I think, Chair, we make this point sharply that we are not a research organization, and we accept that. But for us to be able to give the ministry and government advice that makes sense, it has to be premised on empirical data, on research that is rigorous and based on ethical and methodology that one can say we had research, not just broad statements. So we're building capacity around our research capacity. Hence, we have a series of partnerships with different institutions, be it your UCT, be it your Walter Sisulu, Walter Sisulu University, UKZN, UJ, on specific programs that we want to do, be it on candidacy programs, around infrastructure rollout, around BIM, some of the research that we've been doing. Those are some of the areas that we've been actually researching around, and on the basis of which we are then able to develop briefs, which can then be shared with the ministry and the board, so that at least we can make policy suggestion and proposal to National Treasury and other role players. The next slide, Chair, which is the next point, Puti. You can move to the next slide, Puti. Yes, thank you, sir. It's really a continuation on the research work that we've been doing as well. This one was in relation to the work that around preferential framework to drive transformation. I think our key point when we were appearing at the portfolio, at the parliamentary committee on the procurement bill, was around the issue of definitions on how procurement is defined. Our view as a sector, or the built environment sector, is that it tends to focus on the other aspect except equity. And we think that, yes, price is important, fairness, but I think equity is the one that is understated when you procure goods and services. And I think it's a submission we made. The other point that we made was in relation to, once you accept that the way you define procurement requires you to rethink your program and your scoring on how you score, then you are able to begin to have points that target black professionals in the industry. That's the only way, or one of the ways, you can then begin to create space for professionals to participate in the sector. Because as things stand, Chair, they're sitting outside. The other research work that we've been doing, based on the complaints that we've received around the health and safety and compliance issues, but I think in the middle was prompted by the demands that came through during COVID on how professionals had to respond to COVID compliance in the broader scheme of things. And I think some of the findings from the research is that there is a commitment deficit from leadership to ensure that these issues are attended to. So these are some of the research findings that came through from the research work that was done. The next slide, Chairperson, is mainly the work that we do, which I think is the basis on why CBE exists. One of the reasons, it's really being an appeals authority of the industry. It's prescribed that we need to respond within or deal with matters in 60 days. And in the year under review, we've received a couple. One was the one in relation to SACAP, and we made findings in terms of the decisions taken by the appeals committee that indeed there were issues that required to be attended to. One, the other one was an extra appeal, which was dismissed on the basis that the argument that was put forward, there were no basis for it. The next slide is also was Mr. Muloto versus SCCPMP. The appeals committee dismissed that appeal on the basis that the information that was requested was 4 years old and therefore it could not be sustained. The other one was also around the SCCPMP. This one was drawn on the basis that they were going to go and re-engage parties. So it was drawn from the appeals committee. And the other one was an internal branch around SCCPMP. And the other one was a complaint at Village Shopping Center in Cape Town. I think we're able to make progress. This one is in relation to universal access, where the one of the functions of the CBE, where we get complaints by members of the public where they will raise issues that a shopping mall, in this case was at Village, was not accessible from a wheelchair point of view. We were able to engage with the developers and the mall project managers. They were able to address the issues. And I think those are some of the projects, Chair, that we pride ourselves with. The NYSA issue, where the matter was between the SACAP in relation to the IDOL. So those are some of the programs, Chair, that we were able to deal with in relation to the complaints. And I think we continue to strive to ensure that these matters are resolved within 60 days. In relation to governance matters, Chair, that I would like to share with you, we together with Public Works, we convened the board induction program together with NSG in March. And I think all the professional councils, except those ones who were not appointed at the time, did attend the session. And we think it was a good intervention. Colleagues, board members, they will not necessarily do things intentionally. It's because maybe they're not aware or they do not know. So I think those are some of the interventions that we made around governance issues. So there was an inauguration of the board led by the department, and two council members that were appointed by the minister have been also been replaced. And I think the minister has actually submitted the additional members of council that were still outstanding. So we have a fully fledged council that is currently in place at CBE. Around the financial information, Chairperson, that we want to present to you, like we stated earlier, is that CBE has been impacted by, like any other department, in terms of the financial responsibilities. And I think we try to ensure that we work within the parameters of the law. But this slide really, Chair, what it does, our revenue has grown within the 2.7, I would say, a percentage below the set inflation target, and our cash surplus was received in four tranches from Department of Public Works, and I think our levies that we received from the councils were less than what we expected. And I think, Chair, there are a number of issues there which I think the board is dealing with. One, our levies have not been increased since I don't know how many years. And I think we want to engage with council to relook at some of those levies. But the second issue is that because the fluctuation that we are seeing when it comes to council members or professionals registering with different councils, and I think due to a number of reasons because of the work issues. So I think that's really the issue. But I think in the main, within the parameter. The next slide, please. Our overall budget expenditure, Chair, had a variance of 4.6 percent in terms of the amount is 2.6 million rand that was not spent. And in relation to the areas where we did not spend on program one, we had a budget of 1.9 and the budget that was allocated for the 20-year review, which we are currently doing at this point. The reason why we could not proceed at the time, we went through an SCM process. We were not able to get a suitable candidate, and then we had to restart the process. But I think that work will continue. On program two, Chair, we had an overspending of about a small amount, 243,000 rand, but it was due to the issue of capacity because we had to then start insourcing interns to ensure that we augment the capacity in that particular area. And on program three, you'll note that there we underspent by 0.96% because I think at the time we decided not to. I'm happy that government has taken a similar decision that we manage our travel budget. So sometimes when you have a budget of traveling and then you want to contain how colleagues travel in the organization, it can also result in underspending. So that's really why we underspend on that on program three. I think in the mail we're saying if the meeting can be held virtually, let's rather opt for that than just trying to spend the money. On program four, Chair, we also understand because we could not also get the project that we wanted to do. It was a research project, and I think it took us a bit longer. And then when we got, I think the service providers that we were able to go through our SCM process were not good enough. On project five, which is the one that we, as much as we budget for, but it's dependent on how many appeals do we receive. In this case, we underspend by 24%. Due to the appeals committees. Obviously, like I say, it's unpredictable because if we receive one appeal, we won't spend the money that was assigned for that particular function. On assets and liabilities, Chair, we have commitments that we've attributed to in relation to our move to our new building. Our lease with the previous landlord ended, so we moved into a new building. And I think that also changed some of the modalities on how we spend the money that was assigned to that. We also migrated into cloud contracts or cloud migration that we did. And I think we also were able to manage some of the costs moving forward through some of those interventions. I mean, I can make a point. With the accommodation that we got, we are now in an open plan setup. In the past, it was office bound. So we thought we need to reconfigure the office arrangement. The next slide could see that basically I would want to restate is that we continue to receive a clean audit. There are a couple of findings that we are dealing with, nothing major, but I think those are some of the things that will keep us busy for this current audit financial year. So Chair, that really concludes our presentation and some of the issues. I think Puti, if you can fly that slide, I think I've covered it in my intro remarks in terms of the organograms on who do we have around the executives and the percentages that we have 75% female representing the executives. And I think we pride ourselves in that we're not just having numbers, but I think it's competent colleagues who are good in what they do. And obviously we have to present this information so that at least it is accessible to you, committee members. Chair, concludes our presentation to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, CEO. And thank you to the chairperson for the introductory remarks. Honourable members, I now invite you to engage the presentation of CBE. Honourable Tring, it's only your hand so far that I can see. Honourable Tring?
Should I proceed? Okay. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, please.
Chair, I firstly just want to say that we welcome the clean audit as well as the progressive clean audits that have been achieved over the last few years. And certainly would hope that this is going to be the trajectory going forward, and we will not see a slump in this type of performance. Chair, I think in pursuit of transformation, which obviously includes women advancement and transformation of women in the workplace, just a comment there that, and I think I did hear our presenter also indicate that professionalism is not going to be sacrificed. So I think in pursuit of transformation and women advancement, it certainly mustn't come at the cost of excellence and professionalism. And so CBE must continue to promote excellence and professionalism within the entity itself and with the other organizations with which they work. Then under program four under finance, research and advisory, there was an underspend there. I think that if one looks at your progressive institutions and progressive governments and entities, you will find that research and development in particular is taken very seriously. It is when money is invested and a sizable portion of the budget, I can't remember what the benchmark figure is, but all of those countries and entities that invest below a particular percentage of the budget, one would find that those particular countries, entities lag behind in terms of economic growth, in terms of your fourth industrial revolution, building your industries within the country, improving trade, exports and beneficiation and so on. So I think it's one of the negatives here that that there was an underspend under the program four on research and advisory. And then finally, Chair, I think it must be noted that an anomaly that we have in South Africa is that we have high unemployment, huge numbers of people unemployed, on the extended definition of unemployment, some 40%. At the same time, we have a lack of skilled workers and professionals. It is said that in South Africa, we have one engineer for every 3,100 people, whereas in Germany, you have one engineer for every 200 people. And then again, if you compare the economies of Germany and South Africa, Germany is about the fourth or fifth largest economy in the world. And one of the reasons is because they focus on skilling their people, producing the engineers that the country needs. If we take a look at Transnet over the last 3 years, there was a total of 963 resignations, 606 artisans, 216 technicians, and 141 engineers. And so clearly, and the net loss that Transnet said when they looked at replacing that, there was a net loss of about close on to 393. So we have a challenge where we are losing skilled workers, engineers, technicians, and so on. And my question is, what type of focus does CBE actually have in turning that scenario around? Lack of skills, particularly within the field that CBE is involved in, with your architects and the engineers and within the built environment. What focused programs does CBE actually have in turning that negative trajectory that we have around? Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Honorable Trink, Honorable Matebula, Honorable Van Skalvik, following Honorable Matebula. Honorable Matebula.
Thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity. Chair, well, I have just few things to raise here. Let me also congratulate CBE for keeping the status quo on on the clean audit. I think it's good. They have followed what we said when we met with them, that they are joining an entity which has got a clean audit, and they hidden that, which is such a very good thing. And I wish also the same that they continue to, you know, to keep the status quo, and so that tomorrow we don't meet again and complain that they have actually disappointed those who came before them. Chair, I also just want to raise the matter with regard to people who are living with disability. I will, in fact, lump that with the issue with the women. The issue that was raised in relation to women empowerment. I mean, CBE has been around for some years, let's say. I don't think it is correct that in this day and age, they are still engaging and trying to assist the women. I think they should have by now done so. However, Chair, I do applaud them on the fact that they are looking at ways and means to assist people who are living with disability and women in terms of empowerment. Because when you talk about women, as it has been indicated, that they are assisting them in an environment which is male-dominated, or which was male-dominated and still male-dominated. Not only was it male-dominated or male-dominated, it was male-dominated in particular by a white minority mix. So for bringing them on board, I think it's part of bringing about transformation economically to women and people who are living with disability, because I don't think we are where we want to be with regard to empowerment of women as well as people who are living with disability. And Chair, I must also I just want to check and commend the CBE for, you know, engaging with the graduate, in particular the youth. Chair, we've got about 40 to 42% of unemployment rate in South Africa. 60% of those are young people, and young people they need opportunity to acquire skills and to acquire jobs, because we all know that the future lies in the hands of young people. Now, if you come up with programs that would assist to alleviate and bring down the number of people who are unemployed, in particular young people, I think that is commendable. And Chair, I just want to check as to the number of young people or graduates who have been placed, as to how many adults, so that one is able to see and compare if there's a movement come, you know, the next report, even if maybe it might not find us, but those that will come after us, they must know that how many graduates were assisted. And Chair, I see that of their budget, they've spent 76%. And I see that the intention was to spend 100%, of which is good. Now, it is indicated that it's because of the appeal that they, that they were engaged on. So hence, they could not spend 100%. Now, I just want to check, is it only the issues of appeals, or there are any other issues that might have hampered them from spending 100%. I see that they've spent 76%, which of course is good. The one last issue, but one, Chair, is in relation to irregular expenditure and wasteful expenditure. Well, on Tuesday, it was reported to us to say that the entities, all of them, they are engaging in irregular and wasteful expenditure. That's a report that we got from the Office of the Auditor General. Now, Chair, I haven't heard that being mentioned, that there are any issues of irregular wasteful expenditure. So hence I'm asking if there are any issues, maybe by it's an oversight, by mistake it was omitted. Maybe, of course, there are no such issues. But one last issue, Chair, is in relation to litigation. Are there any issues of litigation against or for the entity? And I want to check if there are any. How much have they spent on litigation, or what is their litigation fee? Thank you very much, Chair. That's what I wanted to write.
Thank you, Honourable Matebula. Honourable Franz Kalvik.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And thank you very much to the entity for the presentation that has been made. I think, let me just greet everyone again, Chairperson, and also the leadership of the entity. Chairperson, I am partly or mostly covered by the previous speakers. My other issues are just in terms of the challenge that they identified on establishing functional database of built environment vendors. Can we get an indication of what these challenges are that they are experiencing in ensuring to get mentors, and also in terms of the ensuring that they transform this industry of built environment professionals? Also, Chairperson, we've been vocal about this candidacy program and the need for that to bear fruit in terms of professionalization of candidates. So if they are talking about this program, can we get an indication of how effective this program is in terms of professionalizing the candidates through this candidacy program in workplaces? Then, Chairperson, I think I need to echo the same sentiment as the previous speakers in terms of congratulating the entity as well as commenting them with the fact that they received a clean audit. It shows how serious they are in terms of dealing on their mandate. But when I look, Chairperson, in terms of the 34.8% vacancy rate, I'm noting it was concerned, Chairperson, especially with regards to the 24 unfunded vacancies. How are they planning to get the rest of these unfunded vacancies or to fill that? What is the plan that they have? Because they've mentioned that they're going to phase in terms of prioritization. But how long will it take to fill all these unfunded vacancies? Once more, in taking into consideration our unemployment rate that we are struggling with in our country. So, just commenting them also, Chairperson, in what they are trying to do with this effort of mentoring
the youth, the unemployed, and youth-owned businesses, growing entrepreneurship, providing work exposure for unemployed youth. That's the kind of initiatives that we really value and we need to bring to the fore, because we are so easily criticizing when we see some things are not being done according to the expectation. But even though the progress might not be like we want it to be, or the impact might not be, but at least they show the level of commitment towards ensuring that they at least address these issues. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Honorable Franz Kalvik. In the absence of the hands, let me also add my voice in congratulating the CBE for consistently getting a clean audit. I don't know which year now, ever since we came in 2019, this is one entity that has been receiving a clean audit. Just a comment from me. I think what Honorable Matebula said, we interacted with the councils, and I remember one member of those councils saying that he would not even advise or encourage his children to be architects because of the way that the black architects are treated here in our country. There is no space for them in terms of business and all that because of the regulations. And again, when we requested to see the composition of the councils and even the numbers, as much as you'll find that the president of that particular council is a black person, but in terms of membership, you would find the majority being male, white members. Very few females, very few blacks, the majority of your council. We are told day in and day out on the news that there is a lack of engineers in South Africa, but we have many people that are currently studying engineering. You don't know where they land to, and sometimes you would find out someone is saying that it is said there is a lack of engineers, but we are here, we are not employed. So my question then, I've seen in you saying that you have a program that you are going to organize mentors for those that would like to maybe even, excuse me, some of those that are working for the government. But my question is, as this entity, what are you doing to ensure that we have more black town planners? That's one. You'll find out when you asking for a town planner, you will go up and down. How do you encourage? I know you are a regulator, but how do you encourage that young students when maybe they go to university, starting there in high school, that they may take go and study to be town planners? How do you encourage young people to be engineers and all that, so that they can participate in this built environment? Because I think the real transformation we will see when we see a change in the composition of those councils. Thank you. Over to you, CBE, Dr. Mieza.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I'm not sure whether President Jali would want to say something before or you'll speak after we've responded to some of the questions.
Yes, thank you, CEO. We acknowledge all the questions that have been asked by the honourable members of the Portfolio Committee. We acknowledge some of the challenges and some of the areas that they've highlighted that we need to look at as a CBE, which some of the programs that we have put in place addresses the challenges that we are experiencing. So I will just hand over to you just to be specific on answering some of the programs that we are running as CBE to address the challenges, specifically when it comes to people living with disability and the transformation programs that we are undertaking to deal with the skills shortages that we have in South Africa. So I'll hand over to you as CEO just to detail the programs that we are currently running in that space. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me start with the question posed by the chair of the Portfolio Committee. Chairperson, you are correct that our sector, I've made a statement which was a bit uncomfortable to my colleagues, that we as 9 professional councils, we are regulating an untransformed sector 29 years later into democracy. And I do think that that requires us to move with urgency on the programs that we do and also focus on transformation, not from a slogan point of view, because what tends to happen when you talk transformation, and I think that's our argument we put forward when we're discussing the procurement bill, is that as regulators, you can transform society or a sector through regulations. So if our regulations are not enabling us to transform the sector, I think we'll come back again here, Chair, in 5 years we'll be discussing the same issue. So we have to be bullish and be strategic, but be pragmatic on how best we tackle this issue. Let me give one example, Chair. We go to schools in different villages. I mean, one of my colleagues, Mr. Boy Sandile, spent a lot of time visiting schools. And what we discover is that some of these schools that we visit, Chair, they don't do maths, pure maths. They do maths lit and maths literature. So already, if a school does not offer young kids maths, pure maths, they will not be able to enter into a built environment sector with maths literacy. And that's where the problem starts. So we've adopted a number of schools together with the NGO sector to say, let's focus on ensuring that these young kids are able to be supported when they do mathematics, because that's the only way they can get into our space. So if they continue doing math literacy, they will not come into the built environment. That's how the programs are designed. So that's the program that we are implementing, and partly those visits that we do in different districts and municipalities is to encourage especially young girls to take maths and science as the subject of choice. A week ago, Chair, we had an engagement with the Department of Higher Education. They presented to us statistics on how many women who are choosing one architect and town planning as a career of choice. So we find a lot of women or girls taking those two professions. And when you start drilling down on why those two professions are being attractive to women mainly, it's because they're office bound. So in the construction space, engineering space, it requires for them to travel. And they do raise issues that if I have to travel, it disrupts the family setup. So those are some of the fundamental issues that we need to find mechanisms through policies of government to say, how do you enable women in the sector to practice without being discriminated against by virtue of being women? So Chair, it is a long-term project, but I think the kinds of questions that are coming through from yourself, Chair, are important.
because if we don't do it, and no one else will do it. So we'll use the regulatory space to influence the kinds of policies and give us the results that we're looking for. Chair, when we give the 13% representation, maybe that's a mistake that we also make. When you start drilling down into different professions, like you were doing, Chair, with the architect, you'll find that within environmental professions, it's dominated by women. So there are more women, more black women in the space. You go into landscape architect, you'll find different dimensions. So maybe when we present the numbers, it's important also to drill down into the actual profession, so that at least our interventions are targeted to say, yes, broadly we've got 30% representation, but the area which we must be targeting are engineers. Why engineering profession is still attracting male and not women? So that's one aspect. The second aspect here is the work that we are doing with universities. And I think I'm going to address the point that was raised by member three about the exodus of young professionals in different from different entities of the state, and also some of them are going abroad. You find that, Chair, these young professionals who come into the public service, they are not well prepared. So we had an engagement with UCT and UJ. Some of the observations from their curriculum is that the kind of training that we were subjected to is still the same as what young people are subjected to. For example, they do climate change courses in fourth year only. So, but yet the country is discussing how we mitigate, how we develop settlements that are able to adapt to climatic conditions that were. But young people are producing from universities are not being taught those things, so they learn those from the industry. The second issue, these young graduates, I was at UCT addressing fourth year students, just organized by the Department of Faculty of Engineering. We asked them, do you know about the Municipal Finance Management Act? Do you know about Public Finance Management Act? Do you know that in a municipality there is a mayor, there is an MMC, there is EXCO, they not get taught those things. So the kinds of professionals we produce are not fit for purpose in terms of the environment that they'll be working in. As a result, what they then do, they then leave the public service, they go into the private sector. And I think universities are beginning to reformulate our program so that we train engineers that are able to assist the country in resolving societal challenges. And I think that's where most universities currently are going through a curriculum review to ensure that the programs that we offer these young professionals respond to the challenges that are facing the country. Because the question that we're posing to universities when we engage with them, as directed by the minister, is that why is it our professionals are attractive to countries like UK, Australia, and the Asian countries? It's because we have good programs, but these programs are not attractive to these young kids in their country of birth. And then what they do, they then leave. And I think those are some of the balancing acts that we must deal with. But I think the point that Member 3 is raising as well, which I think it's about also the environment in which professionals' advice is being taken into in the public service. And I think the minister made a call that we need to professionalize the public service. We need to support those colleagues who are working in public service who are not professionally registered, because currently they are being subjected in doing things that they're not trained to do or they do not have capacity to do. So I think that's also the work that we are doing as part of the professional framework that was approved by Cabinet. Member Scalvik raised a couple of points which are important. And I think this has also gotten us as CBE into some hot waters. In the past, we had a group of mentors that we had procured through a normal procurement system. And our view is that if you look at other professions, be it a legal profession and in the army, people are supported to become professionals without necessarily expending a lot of money. So our view, which we have observed, is that professionals in the built environment, they are reluctant in mentoring young professionals unless they get compensated. We accept that there will be monetary and expenditures that they will incur. But our view is that if you place a young professional in a municipality in Dawu without a chief engineer, then you need to augment that with a mentor who's not coming from that area. And I think our proposal, which we've made in areas like the King South Kalingebo, for example, where we're saying, let's look at a model of a shared service model, because to attract engineers in that area, it's not easy. So those are some of the modalities wherein you can place young professionals, but at least they must be mentored so that at least they can gain professional status through EXA and other councils that they relate with. So the issue of mentorship, I think we need to drive it aggressively, change than what we've done, and request professionals to come forward, not only retired professionals. Like myself, I'm a PR, but someone else mentored me to become a PR. And I think I have that equal responsibility to mentor someone else. And I think the candidacy program that we've actually presented, I think, a couple of years to the portfolio committee, is the one that all professional council and entities of state are using to ensure that there's a structured way on how candidates are supported. But I think we must not negate the fact that to train professionals in the built environment, it's a very costly exercise. And I know my colleagues from DG Public Works, we've actually gone through an exercise recently just to demonstrate to the minister and the DM on how much it cost us to run a structured candidacy program correct, especially with the mentorship and all the programs that must come to support these young kids. And in the issue of the unfunded mandate, I think, Chair, we accept that as an organization with a broad mandate, there will be areas wherein we will have positions that would not that are not funded. But I think the posture that we've taken is that we're not going to be irresponsible and just recruit for the sake of recruiting. Yes, we are getting additional mandate. We've submitted to the minister and as part of our request for support on some of the responsibility that's been given to us. I mean, when we started the financial year, the cabinet took a decision that CPE, working with council, must drive the professionalization program of the state. That mandate wasn't budgeted for in the line item of CBE. It was not the work that we were doing the way it's been directed now. So we need to reconfigure ourselves to say, what does professionalization of the public service in the context of built environment mean, and how do we execute this program to ensure that when cabinet asks for reports and portfolio committee asks on the work that we're doing, we can then report confidently that we're doing the work. So those are some of the vacancies that Chair, that are being reflected. I think when it comes to the issue of unemployment rate, where possible, as a small entity that we do make a conscious decision. And I think if we were to present our age profile, we appoint young people and we're not apologetic about it. But we're also biased towards young women who are professionals or candidates in the industry. So that's where we target in chair. So we'll contribute the best way we can. And also, but we'll not be just going on a recruitment spree that will render us unaffordable. So Matebula raised a couple of points. Remember, Matebula raised a couple of points. And I think I'll let Sari to respond to the irregular litigations. And maybe Tembagaz will come on a number of graduates that we've placed. And then let me try and attend to others before I hand over to my colleagues. Member Thring, you're correct. The research and development is the backbone of any country's development. And I think our view as CBE, if you look at all the objects of CBE, there isn't that says we must conduct research. It says we must advise government. You can only advise government if you invest and spend time on research and we're building that capacity in the organization. We started to recruit researchers who will be focusing on specific issues to ensure that we've got currently two that have joined the organization. That will assist us in ensuring that we drive this research agenda. Obviously, augmenting our capacity with universities and experts that will bring as and when it's necessary. I think let me stop here for now, Chair. Maybe hand over to my colleagues. They can cover some of the points I've omitted, Chair. Thank you very much. CFO, you can start, Chairman.
Thank you, CEO. So just to attend to the members' questions, Firstly, thank you, Honourable Member Matabula, for the question. The expenditure on the programme, the 76 or 75% expenditure, relates only to the appeals. So in Programme 5, both the appeals function as well as the governance, legislative review branches, etc. are there. However, it is only on the appeals function that the CDE is currently incurring cost on that program. Then in relation to the irregular expenditure, so CDE currently does not have any new irregular expenditure. It is currently in the process of clearing all irregular expenditure in the sense of irregular expenditure which was incurred in previous financial years. CDE did not incur any new irregular or fruitless and wasteful expenditure. However, we are in the process of applying for condonation with National Treasury as we are currently speaking to get those old irregular expenditures condoned. Then, Chairperson, on the litigation, we currently only have one litigative matter that is being pursued. In relation where the CDE has heard an appeal, and that appeal ruling has been taken to the court for review. But there's currently no other major litigation that the CDE is party to. Thank you, Chairperson.
CTO, you can come through, Tamaraz.
Thank you, CEO. Good afternoon, Chairperson. Greetings to the Honourable Minister and Honourable Deputy Minister. Good afternoon to the colleagues from DPWI. Also, my apologies for that. Afternoon to the committee members, colleagues from DPWI. I just want to come in, and in fact, CEO has covered me well on my responses, so I'll just follow according to the members, the way they spoke. Chairperson, Honourable Committee Member Trink spoke well on the matter of transformation and how do we then maintain the issue of professionalism. But I think the work we've also been trying to do is also to sort of drive away the myths in us empowering, because in empowering we need to let the women as well as the black people know that they are capable because they've been trained to do the work that they do. So in the programs that we're developing, it is to empower them to be confident. And it also comes with this professionalization framework that we're driving now in terms of ethical conduct of professionals. So that is something that we agree with you, we have to maintain, but while also ensuring that we do not align the two, because the reason we're empowering them is for them to believe that they are capable of doing the work they do. But thank you for that. That is something we will ensure that we work towards. And then in terms of the high unemployment rate, we agree with you. And we are aware that SCPE, of course, we're just a regulatory body that we can't really employ these professionals. But with the partnerships, strategic partnerships that we're developing at SCPE, we are working and ensuring that high unemployment rate with relation to the skilling of the built environment, we work with them hand in hand. And as such, CPE has established an unemployed graduate database. It was in the previous year at about 700, and through going through it, we've now cleaned it up, and some of the graduates have since been employed. And we are sitting at 172 unemployed graduates at the moment, and we're doing this work through our shared services units. And in that, again, this is the work we're doing when we engage with these partners to say, we have this database. It's part of us contributing and ensuring that, like the CEO spoke to it earlier, with the placements that were made with the department. To a member, Matebula, just to speak on the work we're doing with women and persons with disabilities. CE was going to speak to it, but I will touch on it considering that I am speaking. we have been tasked with commemorating the International Day for Persons with Disability that is between the 3rd of November to the 3rd of December. And in that, it's not just us, and with guidance from the community of persons with disabilities, we said the work must not just be a matter of conference and talking, but how do we best empower the professionals that are living with disability and presenting the statistics. And part of our awareness campaign leading up to the conference that we'll be hosting on the 4th of December is to have awareness campaigns where we'll also host a career awareness campaign at a school that we are identifying for young learners with disability. Because in inclusivity, we have to consider all these things. And also then post that will be responsible to ensure that we provide the right data. And that's why we're working with the community for persons with disability. As well, this year we're running a program. We have a program on youth development. And this now speaks to this high employment rate with the youth. And we are saying we need to go beyond just talking about employment. How do we best support young people to start up their own business and also to ensure that they're empowered with the right skills to run these businesses? And also through partnerships, we work closely with our sister entity, CIDP, as well as the Department of Public Works to ensure that there is they get access and an opportunity they deserve with all these infrastructure projects that we run. So those are some of the work that we are doing. And with in fact, I think CEO spoke quite well on what member Van Dijk was speaking to in terms of the candidacy program as well as mentorship. I think that's been our stance and view to say it will not work if this program is not structured. It requires a certain structure if we're going to realize the results that we want within a certain time. Because we had a meeting, for example, today with the Department of Defense, and they've taken the same stance in terms of professionalizing their teams to say, we are with you, we need the support, and we are saying we will guide you in terms of how to best do it professionally and also in a structured way. And as well in terms of this thing of speaking of mentorship and how do we encourage people to give their time. And when it comes to certain compensations, because it will be required at some point, that's what we need to look at. But we need to encourage this paying forward mindset amongst the professionals. And of course, there can be a number of reasons which we acknowledge, but it cannot be that I am now a professional and I got registered, but I don't know how to then give back according to that. And then lastly, then to, and as CEO, just on something she touched on, because we're saying if we're going to empower, we need to use CPE has this skills pipeline strategy in terms of from the secondary level of education to professional, because that is another way that we're saying we need to support this skill capacity, this capacitating of the sector. Because we then need to look at how do we best support the secondary learners at that level to expose them to what the built environment is at early stage. And we, of course, then categorize it in terms of the race factor. We look at the gender, which we know is that there's an underrepresentation. And now we've started, like I've indicated earlier, to look at in terms of the young persons living with disability. Terms have changed and we need to keep up to be inclusive in our thinking. And then just lastly on Chairperson, in total agreement with you. And in fact, in this, in MCE spoke in terms of that to say, we just present a number, but we need to then delve deeper to say, yes, we have a 15%, we have a 14%, but where do the numbers lie? Because then it informs the type of campaigns we then take on and the type of career development plans and skill strategy that we need to develop. It has to be informed by what is currently on the ground. And I think it was one of our discussions to say, we cannot stop young people from being interested in working internationally because that is why we've got these international agreements. but also we need to make our space attractive for young people to want to stay and develop the infrastructure as we want to develop it. How do we balance the two? And in fact, it's true. Most parents would not want their kids to be exposed to sexting because of the oppression and discrimination they receive when they get to these professional levels. And that's the interventions that are tailor-made we need to have. And CS has put it well. At some levels, we're going to sort of disturb the status quo, but we must be unapologetic if we want to realize certain visions by 2030. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll end there for now.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Just to wind off from our side, Chair, before we yield back to you. I think, Chairperson, maybe just to reflect on some of the points that were raised by Member Sring as well. So there is one area in our profession that is understated. Is the issue of mental health in the built environment. And it's beginning to come up in terms of how professionals who are supposed to drive the creation of livable spaces, infrastructure that supports growth to enable access to services to communities, yet their mental state is not well looked after. I'm not talking about the work that is done through HR. The kinds of pressures that they find themselves in the nature of the work that they do. And I think it's an area, Chair, that we not expect in psychological assessment, but I think it's an area which we want to start pursuing because it has an impact on how best we then draw in young professionals into our industry. I jokingly make a joke to my colleagues that when I started in this profession, I had black hair, and then fast forward 10 years later, I'm totally gray. It's not mental health, but I'm just demonstrating the point here that it is the area which I think we have not really paid attention to, the mental health and the built environment professionals and the amount that they are suffering. So I think we're just putting out there because we haven't really started working out the modalities and how we bring in experts to support us. I mean, if you are a young female working in a construction site and there is a language, the discipline and way things are done there, and somehow those issues can impact you. As a young professional who studied in KZN and now you have to move to Gauteng, mentally, how do you adjust? There are no chapters when you land as a young professional in a space that is foreign to you. There are no family, you don't have friends, and you're supposed to perform. And I think those are some of the issues, Chair. I'm not escalating it because it only affects our sector. But young professionals, that's what they grapple with, the issues of mental health in the professional growth and development that they have as well, Chair. And in the context of Black Techs and some of the pressures that you went to university, you're a civil engineer, there is an expectation that you'll be able to provide for your other family members. And yet the country is experiencing high unemployment rates. So those are some of the issues, Chair, that we also want to pay attention to. Thank you very much, Chairperson, for those comments and the question, and thanks to my colleagues for responding to some. If we have missed some, Chair, we'll be guided by you on how we proceed. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Nyeza. Any follow-up questions, honourable members? In the absence of hands, I then invite, I don't know whether the minister has joined because he was to join immediately. Oh, okay. Any closing remarks,
Minister? Yes. No, thanks, Chair. Yes, I joined in the middle of the presentation and one listened to questions and thereafter the responses. I think we firstly would want to join members, or may I start by greeting yourself, Honorable Chairperson, and all honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, and greet the Deputy Minister as well as the officials, DG, and the Chair of CPE and the CEO and the management. I join you to say, just congratulate CPE for the clean audit, but also for being visible in terms of their mandate, in terms of ensuring that they oversee the construction, the built environment, and in ensuring that we build the skills. I would agree that the road ahead is still calling. We need to do a lot in terms of developing skills, especially among females and African females in particular. So we are taking that responsibility, and we have been always, we have been working on some of the problems as alluded earlier. We will continue with such programs, and I think we must also collaborate with other entities, so collaborate with those that are internal departments, but also those that are in other departments too, but working in the same space. Of critical importance will be to further engage with tertiary institutions and have a clear career pathing strategy, which I would say in our last MINMEC we started discussing in detail. So in all, Chair, we want to thank you and commit ourselves to achieve more than what the NPC has fought so far. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Minister. Thank you, Chairperson of CBE, CEO, and the management that responded to questions and comments that have been raised by honorable members. We really are proud of this entity as it is consistent in getting clean audits, and we hope that they will adhere and work on the recommendations from Auditor General and also take into consideration the comments raised by members of the Portfolio Committee on how to move forward with the challenges that we see that are there. They may not be there when it comes to the books of the entity, but they are there for real, because we have seen the composition of those councils, individual councils in the built environment, that they really male dominated and more so white male. So we want to see a picture that really reflects the demographics of South Africa. And I am sure through the programs that we are embarking upon, we will see the results one day. On that note, honorable members, thank you for these last 3 days, your participation in the reports that we have dealt with, starting from Auditor General and the department and all the entities. Your probing questions, constructive criticism, I think will take us somewhere. Next week, honorable members, we will be dealing with then our own report based on all the deliberations and the reports that were presented to us by individual entity and the department, of course, in preparation for our own report that we'll adopt as the Portfolio Committee. On that note, honorable members, because we don't have any announcements, let's meet on Wednesday. We won't have a meeting on Tuesday, just like this week. Let's meet on Wednesday on our normal time at 9 for our Portfolio Committee. Thank you again. The meeting is adjourned.
All hail the Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you.